Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you Christmas contraband and ancient tales.
Oh, right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We are here every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. It's Friday morning, yeah, and so we got our regular Friday features, Straight out of Context, and no Nick D Show spies this week, I'm told, so no one was talking about me on the radio this week. There you go. Good. And then we've got Fly Jams Friday and You Big Dummy, and Vic's Picks. This is where we continue the musical journey that Vic is taking, Vic Vaughn, our own Vic Vaughn, who is... took it upon himself to learn about music, and he was doing so by listening to all of the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone, and we'll get his thoughts on a couple of new albums that he listened to this week. That's coming up later, too. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Fly Jams requests as well, coming up with Luscious Hushes. And you can also talk or text us there. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay. Hey, coming up in after the 1:30 news, Christopher Biewer is going to be here live in studio. And Joel Murray, the one and only Joel Murray, is going to be on the phone. They're both part of this TV pilot called Vendors. Christopher's in it, and he wrote it. And it's directed by Joel Murray. And it was shot here in Chicago, and they're having a big screening of it, of the pilot, Vendors. And it's going to be on Saturday night, tomorrow night, the 14th. And it's at the Chris Farley Cabaret, which is part of I.O. And it's at 5:30. It's $10, and we'll tell you all about the details. I watched the pilot, and it's very funny. And so Christopher's going to be here live in studio. He plays the lead, and he wrote it. And the great Joel Murray, who you know as much more than just Bill Murray's brother, but he's also a terrific actor and director himself. So that's coming up after the 1:30 news right here on 720 WGN. All right. So we are also, because it is Friday the 13th.
Oh, no.
It's Friday the 13th. So we are going to rank all the Friday the 13th movies. Now, I forgot which one is which, but Tom, you'll be able to.
I'll be able to help.
Yeah, you'll be able to help.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan, but I'm definitely a bigger fan than you.
Yeah, well, it's not hard to be a bigger. It's not hard to be a bigger fan than me, but I'm looking at some of these as they rank them. We'll go through all of them. They've got apparently there's 12.
Ironically enough, yes,
there's 12, and they're including the remake.
They are including
in
the
this
remake.
Article.
I mean, yeah. You kind of have to because it's part of it.
Yeah.
If you're going to include stuff like Jason X, you might as well include the remake.
Yeah. Well, so the remake is in here, and so is Freddy versus Jason. So that's, we'll get into the Friday the 13th movies, and then of course we'll talk about some crazy superstitions because people get very superstitious during on this day, Friday the 13th. So, all right, so that's coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us for talk or text. And a little bit later on, Luscious Hushes will be here, so we will hear some Fly Jams and get the regular features going. We'll keep an eye on the weather, as you can hear. If you can hear, those are Those are National Weather Service updates here, and so we'll keep you going. We'll keep you updated on what's happening here right now. It's quiet downtown, but I know it's going to be stormy throughout the morning. So we'll keep you posted all the way through the morning. Vic's in the newsroom and keeping an eye on things, and he'll bust in if it's necessary with any warnings or watches or any of that kind of stuff. We'll keep you posted throughout the morning here on WGN. My producer is Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm very well. Okay. I'm very good.
You're looking forward to the riot festing?
Yeah, I'm going to be riot festing. Going to do the thing, you know, go see some bands, uh-huh. Flaming Lips, Slayer.
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
You're excited about Slayer.
Yeah. I've been a big fan of Slayer since I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be nice to see them. Apparently, this is their final Chicago / they're calling it Chicago / Milwaukee. Because they're not going to play in Milwaukee, so this is their final show in the area. This is their last tour.
Is that what that doesn't every band say that?
Yeah, odds are this is going to be just one of many final tours. They're going to do the final tour, and then they're going to do the reunion tour, and then they'll go away.
Well, that's what everybody does.
Got to ring out every dollar.
I mean, you know, the Rolling Stones toured this year, and you know, they've had 10 final tours at some point, but they're still rolling around.
Strolling bones.
Elton John is continuing his farewell tour, which is, you know, probably going to continue for another year.
Yeah.
So.
Gotta milk
how many
it.
Final tours has Cher had?
So, who knows?
Yeah. There you go. All right. In the newsroom, as I mentioned, is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Hey, good morning, sir. Pretty good. Just
good.
Updating these advisories like you were just talking about. That was a special marine warning for Wilmette and Winthrop Harbors, but doing good.
Okay. Keep an eye on everything. By the way, my favorite commercial is on right now, the Kit Kat with the ugly pumpkin. I love that commercial so much.
I have 15 TVs in here, and it's not on a single one of them. I'm looking around. I guess
yeah,
I've never
just
seen that.
It just ended. The commercial just ended. It was on Channel 9. It was on WGN.
Ah, okay.
So, anyway, so how you doing, Vic?
Really good. I've heard some darn good music this week, Nick. So
I'm
kind of on a high from that amazing music I listened to this week. So
you keep climbing closer and closer
I
to
know.
The top. So basically, you're getting closer to some great, great, great albums.
Right.
So as you climb to the top of the Rolling Stone Top 100 list.
Yep, we're in the top 10 now.
In the top 10, those are all going to be good. Even if you disagree with the rankings or you disagree with Rolling Stone, these are great records that you're getting.
You know, it's been really hard not to jump ahead, too, but I have not. And I've been doing this. We started doing it on air in May,
mm-hmm.
but I was already on album 69 by then. So there were, you know, 68 albums before that. So I can't wait to get these top couple of ones.
Yeah.
But the ones I listened to this week, really, especially one of them, was just amazing.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we'll get to that. That's coming up with Vic's picks, and he's in the newsroom keeping an eye on everything that's happening in the world and weather-wise here in the Midwest and so on and so forth. So we'll keep you updated on the warnings and the watches and all that stuff. So, Tom, how far behind on Big Brother are you?
I've watched. I think I'm up to date except for tonight.
Last night?
Or last night, pardon.
Yeah.
So last night. I did not watch because I went to go see Grandma.
Okay.
And so I you told me that you were screaming at the
TV.
I
was screaming at the TV. Screaming at the TV. You know, if I could afford to buy a new TV, I probably would have smashed the one that I have. I was so angry. But it was, you know, it was one of the best episodes of the season. There's no question about it. I mean, it got me that nuts. And, you know, it was obviously eviction night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's live, you know, as it is. And, if you're a Big Brother fan, how did you react to last night's episode if you watched it? Because I was just going to kick the TV in. I was so angry.
Well, once I watch it, I'll have to text you, and then I'll have to listen. Well, maybe they won't do it this morning since Bill and Wendy will be occupied, but I want to see if Wendy has a reaction to it.
Oh, yeah. I would like to see if Wendy, because Wendy watches it as well. She's a Big Brother fan like us.
Yeah.
Big time. I was so mad. And I have to say this. I will admit this. As angry as I got and as frustrated as I was, you know, I have to admit that the person that's responsible for what happened, and, you know, what happened last night, it was evil and conniving, but great gameplay. That's how you play Big Brother. And this person did something that I was just so angry about what happened, but I have to tip my hat. You know what I mean? Like, this person who did this is playing the game, you know, and succeeding at it.
That's a fascinating feature of reality television, you know, where it's like the stronger the reaction, like even negative reaction, madder you get, the better an episode it kind of
was.
Well, I
was just beside myself. I was so mad. And I don't want to give anything away if people haven't seen it yet. If you saw it, if you're a Big Brother fan, what was your reaction to what happened last night? Because I seriously was so mad. My mom was so angry because I talked to my mom, you know, after Big Brother. My mother watches it, and that's you know, we talk to each other all the time about Big Brother, and she was beside herself too. But like I said, as angry as I was, you know, as much as it frustrated me and it made me crazy, what happened last night. I have to tip my hat to the person responsible for what happened, because it was lying and it was, you know, manipulative, and it was Big Brother. It's just that the person who did this is not one of my favorite people in the house. In fact, it's my least favorite person in the house, by far my least favorite person in the house. But this person is playing the game, you know, playing it dirty and playing it the way you play it if you're going to win $500,000. But man, I was angry. I was just so angry. So I don't know if you guys watch. Big Brother, you want to text in your thoughts or you want to call in. I don't want to give any spoilers away. But if you guys watch Big Brother, were you as angry and frustrated and pissed off as I was while watching it last night? So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back. And if you guys want to talk about it, give me a call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. If you watched last night's Big Brother, what was your reaction? All right. Give us a call. We'll talk a little bit more about that coming up right here on 720 WGN. Oh, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. It's Friday, so that means all the Friday features straight out of context. We got no Nick D show spies this morning. Straight out of context, and You Big Dummy, and of course, Fly Jams Friday, and Vic's Picks all coming up here on a Friday morning. Also coming up right after the 1:30 news, we'll be joined live in studio with Christopher Biewer, and then on the phone, we'll be talking with Joel Murray. They're all part of this new pilot TV show called Vendors, which I've seen, and it's very funny. Shot right here in Chicago locally, and there's going to be a big event where they screen it at the Chris Farley Cabaret at I.O. Tomorrow night at 5:30, and we'll give you all the details on that. Christopher also appears in it and wrote it, and Joel Murray directed it. So we're going to have a lot of fun talking about that that stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us either via text or talk. 312-981-7200. We were just talking about Big Brother, of which I am a fan and have been a fan, and I watch it every summer. I watch it. And something happened on the show last night. Something happened on the show last night, and I just was so infuriated that I was like screaming at my TV. My mother, who also watches Big Brother on a regular basis, she and I talked afterwards and could not believe what happened. There will be no spoilers. I won't give anything away in case people are behind, like my producer Tom's behind, and I won't give anything away. But it was it was one of the best episodes of the season, without question. It was an eviction night. It was live. And I was beside myself. And yet, you know, what happened and who did it and who's responsible for what happened, it was brilliant gameplay. It really was. The person who is responsible, I can't stand. It's my least, absolutely least favorite person in the house. But you know, I got to tip the hat to this person. Yeah. So let's see. We've got some texts coming in. I guess everybody else was mad, too. It looks like people were pretty mad, Don.
People are furious. There is some heat coming in on the text line.
Yeah.
God bless them.
Yeah. No, it was just as soon as it happened, I just was like, no, what? And of course, you know, last night's episode ended with, you know, Tom, it ended with an endurance competition for HOH. So of course I'm DVRing as we speak. I'm DVRing After Dark. I'm DVRing Big Brother After Dark because I don't want to wait till Sunday to find out who wins at a household because I'm a dork. So when I get home in the morning, I'm going to bust in and watch Big Brother After Dark so I can see who's got the key around their neck. I want to see who the HOH is. So we got some texts. If you watch the show and you want to call in or text, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. I seriously was going to put my foot through the TV. I was so mad. 414 area code says, I won't name the names here, but they are idiots. Can't they tell when they are being played? That's exactly what I thought. By the way, this is all in caps with exclamation points. So people are very angry about what happened on Big Brother last night. 708 area code 2. I was mad too. I think if it wasn't for all the crap that this person pulled, I could respect this move. But this person is not a nice person, period. And I will be really upset if this person wins. I feel the same way. I got to say, the fact that this person pulled that off is, I mean, it's aggravating, and I hate this person. The person makes me nuts, but yeah. 815 area code says, I was so, like, 5-0s pissed, but this person deserves to win. There seems to be a consistent theme to the texts that are coming in. 847 area code says, I didn't like the lying on Big Brother and was upset that the wrong person was evicted. I also greatly dislike the person who concocted the plan. I'm trying to leave out names and not to spoil it for those who didn't see it. This seems to be a common thing going on right now.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah. You know, reading the text line here, I'm piecing together. It's okay. I'm going to go back and watch it, but I'm piecing together more or less what happened. And wow.
Yeah.
This is frustrating.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. I'm so mad at two people for believing this idiot over the other person. So mad they thought that keeping this other person was a good move in general. The first priority should have been splitting up something. That's Robert. I'm being as vague as I possibly can without giving away any details because, again, I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't seen it. That was Roberta and... in Florida. Hey, Nick, it's Rachel from the film club. Rachel is great. I love Rachel. She comes to my film club every month, and I think we're going to be back up and running, I think, in November, because they're still working on the theater. They're upgrading the theater that we use on the second floor at the AMC Rosemont. They're putting in all them fancy schmancy leather recliner seats and stuff. Once they're done with that, we will get back to our monthly film club, and Rachel comes every month, and she's a Big Brother fanatic, and for the years that Rachel has been coming to the film club, every film club, the first thing we do is during the summer months is we talk about Big Brother. We just scream about it.
Got a dish.
It says, I feel the exact same way as you do about Big Brother tonight. I hated the move and the perpetrator, but it was a genius move. And then she screams, but go this other person. She's rooting for somebody in particular. Rachel, I am rooting for the same person you are. I am absolutely rooting for the same person you are. And I've grown to really... really like this person a lot, but this person did a boneheaded thing last night. Yeah, you got to let me know what you think, Tom, when you watch it.
Yeah, it's
because you're starting to piece together.
I'm piecing together the basic narrative, but it's one of those things where I just kind of have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, And by the way, the drama from last night's episode continues on Sunday, because right before the broadcast started, they had a house meeting and it went ballistic, and they showed about 2 minutes of it on the show last night at the end. Said, here's what went down. Watch this confrontation. And it was really crazy and really intense, but they only showed like a minute and a half of it. And they said, tune in Sunday night to see the rest of it. So they're going to show the whole house meeting where the crap
Hell
hits
yeah.
the fan. So
good. I was afraid it was going to be too hot for TV.
No,
they're gonna give it to you.
Yeah, they are, because they went nuts. I mean, it's a crazy when you see this, it's a crazy move. It's a crazy, Jeez. Crazy move. That is as, you know, manipulative and dishonest as you can possibly imagine or do on the show.
So, I mean, now that we're at this point, it seems like this season has taken quite a turn from where it started.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, it took a while. It took a while for this season to kick in, and it took a while for me to find people to root for. Because, I mean, at the beginning, I was like, these are the biggest idiots I've ever seen on this show. And I felt that way for a few weeks until I got to get on the side of certain personalities and all that stuff. And once the conflicts started to pop up as the seasons went by, it became a pretty compelling season of Big Brother.
Now, speaking as vaguely as possible, do you think this is going to end the way you want it to, or is it just too up in the air?
What do you mean? The finale?
Like, yeah, for the person that you want to win.
It is going to end not the way I want it to. I guarantee you the person who pulled this move last night is going to win.
Really?
Yes.
All right.
I'm almost positive that the person who pulled this move last night is going to win Big Brother. The person played a great game, but I hate the person. Let me just say that. I mean, it's one of those deals where people are going to have to acknowledge that this person played the game as shrewdly as you possibly can. And also, you know, dominating comps and stuff like that.
A begrudging respect.
Exactly. For a total jerk. All right, let's break here, and we got the news coming up. And then after the news, we'll be joined by Christopher Biewer and Joel Murray from the TV show Vendors. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here. It's a Friday morning, so all the regular Friday features will be coming up. It's also Friday the 13th, so we're going to talk about superstitions, and we're going to rank the Friday the 13th movies from best to worst, even though I don't think there is a best one. But we'll get to that a little bit later. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. But right now, I want to introduce to you my guests. In studio, I have Christopher Biewer. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, you are. No one's been able to pronounce it until Justin Bieber became my...
Oh, I see. I see. So for a year... No, so you'd like to thank Justin Bieber.
I actually would, because it was Bayer, Biewer, Brewer, and then so I'm like, it's like Justin
it's Bieber. It's Biewer. Okay, there we go. And you are the... You wrote the pilot for a TV show called Vendors.
Yes.
And you guys are having a special pilot screening of it at Chris Farley Cabaret at the I.O.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Saturday night. And so you wrote it, and the director... who also narrates the show, is on the line with us, and we've had him on the show before. He's the great Joel Murray. Joel, how are you, man?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good.
Murray. Nobody ever pronounced that before Eddie Murray played so many years for the Orioles. But that was really good pronunciation.
Good. How you been, man? Last time we talked was around Christmas when I was hosting a screening of Scrooged. How you been?
I've been good. It's all been downhill since then, but... That was a great peak in my my life since that day.
Very cool.
I'm in New York City. I'm calling in from New York.
Oh.
And I was here for 9/11, and I'm still here.
Ah, okay.
For 9/12.
For 9/12. There you go.
Another morbid day.
Well, let's talk. First of all, let me talk to Chris. Chris, give me your background a little bit. Now, you told me off the air, you and an old friend of mine are in an improv group together.
Yeah, Len Foote and I met at I.O. When it was still called Improv Olympic before the confusion.
Yeah.
And we were in a group there called The Tour, but then we started with some other friends, an independent improv group called Hippo Horsey Donkey Monkey.
Mm-hmm.
We've been performing for the last 16 and a half years.
Yeah, I saw you guys at Ginger's Ale House.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But very funny stuff. But I've known Len about 30 years. So just give him my best. I haven't seen him in a while. So, Chris, you came from the world of improv.
Yes.
And go ahead.
I went to Marquette, and I did some television and some radio stuff while I was in school. And then I found improv while I was there. And then came to Chicago, and I studied at I.O., studied at Second City, and then eventually moved to L.A. and performed at I.O. West, both improv and sketch. And then I started teaching improv. So that's kind of the world that I have been in.
Right.
But in L.A., you better create your own content or you don't have a job.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I started writing as well.
All right. And Joel, how did you come to be a part of this project?
I'm thinking about getting into improv. I've got some friends that are funny that think I'm funny. But Christopher sent me a script, and I thought it was really good and humorous and funny. And I said, well, I know some of the Ricketts, and maybe I can get you into Wrigley Field. And I worked on that, and then MLB threw out a huge number to actually film it in Wrigley. And next thing you know, Christopher said, well, you should direct this. So I was shocked, and suddenly I was the director. I was just trying to be a facilitator, but it's been a fun experience. We got it done. We didn't get to do it in Wrigley because of Major League Baseball wanted so much money, but we got to do it out in King County, which is fabulous, out by the Cougars, and everybody there was so great and facilitating and wonderful, but
All right.
How did I get in?
You just sent him a script just cold?
So Joel did a show after a show that I did at IO. I did Top Story Weekly, and Joel would do his Joel Murray and Friends show, and we'd passed in the hallway a few times. So then I, you know, took that as we were best friends. So I asked him to be my Facebook friend, and he said yes. And then I had written the script, and Michael McCarthy, a mutual friend, had read it. And
great guy.
And I had said to him, do you think Joel would be interested in being part of this? And he's like, yes, he loves baseball and he wants to film in Chicago. So send it to him. So I sent it via Facebook Messenger.
Wow. Modern technology.
Yeah, no, I shut that down right after this, strangely enough. I get a lot of golf submissions. I've got Caddyshack 5. I think would be really good for you and your brother. There's a part of the milkman that you would be good as if we get your brother to be the lead in Caddyshack 5. But I've shut down Messenger.
Yeah,
just it. FYI.
That's it. Okay. Well, tell me about the. Well, first of all, tell everybody what it's about. About what Vendors is about.
So Vendors is about. The vendors at a baseball stadium, specifically Kyle Lidecker is the lead character, and he's kind of a guy who's got some strings of bad luck, and he ends up back at his job as a vendor after years of being away, and his uncle got him the job, who is played by the wonderful Tim Kazurinsky.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of his return to being a vendor is where the pilot starts.
Yeah, and it's very funny. I watched it. Joel, nice job directing it, man. It's a really funny piece of work.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of recognizable people in the show. But Mike McNamara is a guy that I know who's got a brief role in it, and Emo's in it.
Yes,
you got Emo Phillips. Yeah, what was it like working with him, Joel?
Emo's like working with no one else. He's unique. No, he's fabulous. He's a great guy, and I've known him since we did the Kenny Comedy Festival way back, like 1993, and so I've known him since then, and he's friends with my buddy Pasquazi.
Yeah.
And he's a great guy and a huge talent, and when you need somebody to play somebody who's a little bit off, Emo's your guy.
My favorite part was when Emo asked Joel, from on a scale of 0 to 100, how much Emo do you want? The answer was 100.
100, yeah, 100. He's very funny.
I think I said 3, actually, but anyway.
I've had him on the show a few times, several times, and I knew his wife from doing theater in Chicago years ago. Kipley. I've known her for years, and so they're a wonderful couple. And he's really a unique guy. One of the things I love about Emo is that there's nobody else like him, obviously. And he doesn't. It's very difficult to do this. He does not work blue. He never works blue. And I think that's great.
No, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kipley and I did Top Story Weekly together. That's
how did.
I actually got to know Emo was from doing that show for 5 years with Kipley.
She's great, man. She's just terrific. Where'd you guys shoot it, Joel? What were some of the locations? Where'd you guys shoot besides Kane County? Is that where you shot the whole thing?
Well, we shot it at a brew pub on the west side. Where were we?
We were at Dovetail Brewery.
Dovetail. Yeah. Oh, sure. Well, it's in the movie. Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really great to us, and we got to drink as much as we wanted, and that was a lot.
That's always That's always a plus, right? Yeah.
And what else did we shoot?
We shot at a house on Southport.
Friend of yours' apartment. We moved them out.
And wait a minute, at Southport where?
Southport, just north of Byron.
Byron. I used to work at the Jewel at Addison and Southport, right by the music box.
Just past Tunes.
I know where Tunes is, absolutely. Wow, that's cool. Yeah. So use the city. And how long did it take you guys to shoot it?
I think it was 5 days, right, Joel?
5 days, yeah.
Wow.
And we did shoot the Little League scene in Glen Ellen or Wheaton.
Oh, the scene at the beginning? The
Little League scene, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The slow-mo narrated stuff was great. And these little leaguers came out and were so good. And their parents were so nice. And there was a thunderstorm, like, in the distance the whole time. You could see the storm coming. And it never quite hit. So that was a beautiful thing. Because when you're shooting in the Midwest, you never know when you might just be shut down the whole day. But it worked out really nicely.
The kids are great. How'd you find them?
Well, the kid that plays the young version of me is my nephew.
Yeah.
Jacob looks enough like me that it was believable.
Yeah.
And then Blake, the kid who plays my nemesis, the young Josh.
Right.
Was an actor that flew in from L.A. And then the Yes.
I thought it was one of your nephew's friends. He was an actor from L.A. I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
And now I know.
Yes.
That's great.
I believe he actually just did something really big, is what I was told, but I didn't look it up.
Oh.
And then the two baseball teams, one was my other nephew's baseball team, and then someone that Deanna Cooper, the amazing producer, knew.
Yeah. Well, the whole family involved here.
Yeah. If you see the casting credit at the end, it does say friends and family casting.
Friends and family casting. There you go. All right, Joel, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. Joel Murray is going to hang out, and Chris Bewer is here, and we're talking about the show Vendors. The pilot's been done, and I watched it, and it's very funny. And we're going to talk more with Chris and with Joel after this, right here on 720 WGN. Don't mind, we'll make time and take it slow. I'll go wherever you go. Hey. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Friday morning, and we're going to be talking to all of our regular Friday features coming up. Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show, Spies, You Big Dummy, Vic's Picks, and Fly Jams Friday. All coming up here on the show. It's Friday the 13th, so we're going to talk about that topic as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us via talk or text. But right now, in studio with me is Christopher Bewer, who writes and appears in a TV pilot called Vendors. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And the director of this pilot is the great Joel Murray. And Joel's on the phone with us from New York. Joel, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good to be here.
All right. How much directing have you done, Joel?
I directed a lot of sitcoms. I directed Dharma and Greg when I was on that show, and Still Standing when I was on that show. And I've done The Big Bang Theory and Last Man Standing and Two Broke Girls, and I've done some shorts and some things like that, and I thought I'd be doing a lot of directing at this point in my career, but apparently not a good time to be a white guy directing in your 50s in Los Angeles. just not, I don't know. So I've been doing a lot of improv, actually. Strangely enough, I've come full circle, and I travel around doing a live Whose Line Is It Anyway show all over the U.S. and Canada.
Oh, wow.
And that's nice, because it fills the non-directing gaps.
What do you like directing, Joel? Is it something you really like?
Oh, it's the best gig in the world. It's really fun, and the DGA is probably the best union out of the ones I have to choose from. And it's fabulous to get to run a show, and you've got to go between the producers and the actors. And being an actor, I kind of know what the actors want, and I kind of know what the producers want. So I'm a good choice in that aspect. But it's a fabulous gig.
Yeah.
I think that was the point of the question. Yeah, no, it's the best gig ever.
Great. Okay. Chris,
you earn your insurance in 1 week, and you earn a pretty good amount of money in a week.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, you did a great job.
Residuals are better on the DGA.
Yeah. You did a great job, and it's really funny. Tell everybody about the event this Saturday, Christopher.
So on Saturday at 5:30 at the I.O. Theater, the Chris Farley Cabaret, we're going to be showing the TV pilot. It's actually the public premiere in Chicago of it. And then it is being followed by a Q&A with the director and some cast members, including Ryan Dempster of the Cubs and myself. Kim DeJesus is trying her best to fly in from Kentucky, where she's currently filming a movie. And then the cast and director are going to do an improv show with some guests from some of the best improvisers in Chicago are going to be joining us. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. Wow, what a night.
All for $10.
That's cheap. That's really cheap. Only $10. And you get to see vendors, which is very, very funny. The Q&A and everything. When do you get to town, Joel?
I'm not sure. The flights, it looks cloudy here. I'm on a balcony in Brooklyn overlooking Manhattan in the distance. It's beautiful. But I'm hopefully going to get out tomorrow evening and get there in time.
Great, 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 great. Very cool. So Joel, I just wanted to tell you that it's very windy on that balcony.
It is. That's what I'm talking about. I'm literally on a balcony.
I just wanted to tell you that since we talked last, every month that I do my film club screening, we now have a reception at Caddyshack right down the street. We've been in partnership.
Oh, no kidding.
We've been in partnership with Andy and everybody over there now since for 6 months, 6-7 months now. We've been doing it every month, and they're just completely gracious and awesome, and the food is really good. It's become a really cool partnership with my film club, man. And I just wanted to let you know.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, it's great. It's really, really great. So
my new favorite thing is when I have a flight out of Chicago, I go like 3 hours early, and I take the free shuttle over the Crown Plaza.
Yeah,
in the hotel?
Yeah, Crown Plaza. Yeah,
Crown Plaza, and I take the free shuttle over and go to the Caddyshack and drink for about 2 hours, and then I go back to the airport.
Yeah,
and the bags are checked. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, no, it's a great place. If people have not been to the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant and bar in Rosemont, it's really, really great. And the staff couldn't be cooler. And your brother Andy's great.
Mike Avella, the manager, is the nicest guy.
Yeah, Mike is great. But we've had this partnership. My film club is kind of on hiatus right now because they're remodeling the movie theater that I use. They're putting in the reclining seats now. The big fancy reclining seats.
Oh.
So we've been dark for a couple of months. But when we go back, we'll do the whole Caddyshack thing. They get 15% off. My film club members who come out see the movie, they go to dinner beforehand, 15% off all the food. Then they just go down to the theater, and the partnership has worked out great. And it's a great restaurant, Joel.
Well, reclining seats will lead to dancing, so you got to be careful about that.
Oh, really? For me, the reclining seats always lead to me falling asleep.
Yeah, it depends on the movie.
Yeah.
So, all right. So where did the idea for Vendors, the script come from, Christopher?
So I was born a diehard Cub fan, cursed as I was.
We were having a little discussion. I have my World Series Cubs hat on right now. I grew up 6 blocks away from Wrigley Field on Addison, so I'm a Cub fan.
We got a W today.
Yeah, we did. Yes,
barely.
We did. Yeah,
it was a scary W.
Boy, you pitched his butt off today, didn't he?
14 strikeouts in six innings.
14 strikeouts,
yeah.
Exactly.
Amazing, amazing. So anyway, you're a diehard Cub fan.
I have had season tickets since 2003, and I just kept watching the vendors while you're around, and so I started to get to know some of them and ask and talk to them, and like they have the widest variety of like origins and what their other jobs are. There was a guy who's a lawyer. He fascinated me. He's a lawyer, works all day as a lawyer, and he loves baseball and is single and is like, why wouldn't I just come watch baseball and sell beer?
Yeah.
And I was, Scrubs was on the air when I started writing this, and I thought, well, the hospital setting isn't really what Scrubs is about. It's about the crazy people that work at a hospital.
Yeah.
And so I was like, no one's ever done the crazy people at a baseball stadium, but they are unique.
Now, I have to ask you, is the whole picking out of a hat thing for what you push that day, is that real?
So it is artistic license a little bit.
All right.
A little bit. So the way it really works is that by seniority, they get to select what they're going to sell.
Uh-huh.
But it is if you show up on time. If you show up late, your seniority drops, and you're stuck selling whatever. So that is why the older guys get there early. They sign up for what they want, and then they...
And is beer the most coveted thing to sell?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No doubt.
Yes, yeah, not red vines?
My boy Gus, who is actually in vendors as well, is a fan of all the vendors, and he knows them all. And I have to tip accordingly to how much Gus loves all these vendors. And he's like, that's Jake. No, you don't understand. I was at a day where we were at Cubs Park, Sox Park, and a Bears game. And he was at all three.
Wow.
This guy's amazing. But, yeah, there are certain vendors that are just legendary. And, you know, hopefully we'll touch on some of them in the long run of this series. In the seventh year, we'll know all these guys.
The seventh year is a pivotal year in the Bible there. So,
you know, I went to a game because rarely the Sox and the Cubs are home at the same time. That's just it's not a. So I went to a Cub game and then I jumped on the red line. And I went to a Sox game.
Is there a law or something?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if there is. But there was a vendor. I recognized a vendor who was at Wrigley Field earlier and was at Comiskey, or whatever the hell they call it now.
Not even the cell anymore.
No, it's the guaranteed rate. Yeah, rate. The rate? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they call
it. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So, anyway.
I also am guilted into tipping vendors way more than I used to because of writing a show about them. I was like, well, I have to tip you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you do confront that in the show where the guy wants his 50 cents back. What a jerk!
And it happens all the time.
Thank God I didn't star in this thing because I don't have to tip accordingly.
Yeah, exactly. So Joel, tell me about the voiceover stuff. Did you enjoy doing that? The narration.
Well, yeah, no, that's the easiest what works. Narration. It's difficult work. You have to read off a podium into a microphone. It's not hard. It's one of the easier venues that I get to perform at. I don't know. That's kind of an easy one.
Yeah. Well, you do a great job. It's really fun to listen to. And so again, I want to remind everybody that the pilot screening of Vendors is Saturday, September 14th at 5:30, Chris Farley Cabaret at IO. And that's on Kingsbury Street. It's only $10. And again, tell everybody again what follows the screening.
Following the screening, there'll be a Q&A with the director Joel Murray and Ryan Dempster and myself as Ryan plays Keith Lumber in the show. And actually, Ted Wolfers, the musician who wrote our theme song as well as all the music, is going to be there. And then there's going to be an improv show with the cast and crew that are present, as well as some guests.
And hopefully some friends I can coerce into joining us.
Yes.
There you go. Get some people out there. That's going to be great. It's going to be really great. By the way, how often does Ryan Dempster bust up the Harry Carey?
He didn't do it, I don't think, on set unless someone else asked him. I didn't see it.
No?
But his skill of being able to talk and hold liquid in his mouth at the same time was...
He comes on this station all the time. He's always here. And he's a hilarious guy. And obviously, you know, obviously very funny.
Very busy. It was great that he found the time to do this.
Yeah, great. He's great. Yeah, he's great in it. But I quickly want to tell my favorite Harry Carey story. This is my favorite Harry Carey moment probably ever. And there's a million of them. And I still have yet to tell Ryan this story. I still haven't told him. We haven't had enough time. But really quickly, I'll tell you guys this. This goes back. Harry's in the booth, and he goes, "Hey, Steve!" And he's up there with obviously Steve Stone. And he goes, "Hey, Steve! We got a group from Kent State here today." And Steve goes, "Oh, that's great, Harry." And he goes, "You went to Kent State, didn't you, Steve?" And Steve goes, "Yeah, that's right." And he goes, "And they didn't shoot you?"
Only four, Dad.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's only Harry Carey could get away with that. It's one of my funniest. And they didn't shoot you? I was like, oh, my God. So, Joel, always great to talk to you, my friend, and welcome home when you get here this weekend, okay?
All right. I'll see you at the Caddy Shack.
Okay, buddy. Take care. There you go. Joel Murray, everybody. And, Chris, nice to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you.
You're great in the show. The show's really good, and I wish you all the success in the world. And Saturday's event sounds fantastic. Again, it's Saturday at 5:30. It's $10 to get in. Chris Farley Cabaret at IO Improv. You get to see vendors, a bunch of improvisation, a bunch of really talented people in a Q&A. It's just going to be a good night. Congratulations, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, absolutely. We'll take a quick break here. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Good morning. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the WGN Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. It's Friday morning, and all the regular Friday features will be coming up. We got You Big Dummy. That's where we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then Tom votes and I vote, and we'll get one caller to call in at 312-981-7200 and to be the third vote on who gets the dummy of the week. We have Straight Out of Context. Straight Out of Context is when you listen to this radio station 24/7, and whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds kind of dirty and it makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We don't have any this week of Nick D Show Spies, but that's what it is. You listen 24/7 whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity. We want to know about it. Who's talking about us? We want to know about it. So jot down the day, the time, who mentioned me, and send it to NickDShow@gmail.com. Vic's picks coming up. Vic has been going through and educating himself in the world of music and listening to some truly classic albums, and we'll get his review and what he's learned about the artists of two more albums this morning. That'll be coming up at 3:30. And, of course, Fly Jams Friday. So if you want to get your requests in for some Fly Jams, for some R&B, for some funky stuff, That was 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. It's Friday the 13th.
Oh, no!
And it's also, what's the deal? There's a full moon?
Yeah, it's a harvest moon. It's a full harvest moon.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
But they haven't had one on Friday the 13th in like 20 years or something like that?
Something ridiculous. And yeah. Just,
so that adds to the insanity of the day. Friday the 13th. So we're going to talk about superstition. And if you want to join us, are you a superstitious person? And I've got here from insider.com. By the way, you can read the entire article. As you should, like us on Facebook, because what's happening on the show is also happening on the Facebook page. And so you should like us and follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So this article is some of the more bizarre superstitions from around the world and the meaning behind them. People are at least a little superstitious, is what they say. Whether that be placing trust in lucky numbers or trying to avoid bad omens, different cultures have incredible stories behind their superstitions. Thinking that trimming your nails at night will bring you bad luck is a belief in India, for example, while in the U.S., people see pennies as a sign of good luck. We've got some bizarre superstitions that we're going to be talking about, and if you want to join us. So, you know, I just I don't necessarily think I'm a very superstitious person. Are you superstitious at all, then?
I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Okay. Well, I'm not really, but I just figure what's it going to hurt if I do something like not walk under a ladder?
Yeah, I like the tradition of it.
Yeah. You know, I don't, you know.
You're not going out breaking mirrors.
No, I don't do that. I don't, I've owned black cats, and they've crossed my path many times. So that one I don't believe in. But I will say this, the world of theater is loaded with superstitions. And when I've done theater in the past, those are the ones that I sort of like practice when I was doing theater. Like, for instance, and I still won't even say it, even though I'm not in a theater. I will not say the name of Shakespeare's Scottish play. Will not say it. Certainly not in the theater. Because if you say the name of the Scottish play, and I won't even say it now. I don't even say it. If you say the name of a Scottish play in a theater and you are not doing the Scottish play, you will bring bad luck. And so if I've ever heard somebody say it in a theater and we're not doing that show, like one time I did this play called Among the Dead, and it was a massive cast, like a huge, huge cast. And one of the cast said it. And so now what you're supposed to do, if somebody says it, the name of the Scottish play, what you do is you that person has to leave the theater and you're outside. You have to close the door. Then you spin around three times. You spit, you swear, and then you ask for permission to come back in. And then the other person will grant you permission to come back in.
Do you know where that started?
I don't.
Yeah, I know it's just always been a thing. It's like the break a leg
thing.
It's just always been, I just wonder.
Yeah. Well, break a leg has several different interpretations.
Yeah.
You know, when people bow, they break a leg. That's mm-hmm. So that means, so there's been a few. Somebody said that for some reason it goes back to Lincoln's assassination
mm-hmm.
because John Wilkes Booth was an actor and he jumped out of the balcony, broke his leg.
Yeah.
And then he went to a doctor named Mudd. But so I'm not sure where the Scottish play thing came from, but I don't play around with it because I was in a production of a show and someone said it and we didn't worry about it, but it ended up being a nightmare.
Really?
Yeah. And then I was in, like I said, I was in this play and one of the guys said it. And we did this play at the end of the year. So it was like a Christmas, New Year's. It was a zombie play. So, of course, we opened it at Christmas. So one night this guy says it. And his first scene in the show, he was an ensemble member, so he played several parts and also a zombie. But his first scene in the show, he's shirtless and he's wearing shorts. And so he's in his costume for his first scene because we're kind of close to curtain. And so he says it and I go, whoa. I said, dude, you got to go out. You got to go outside. He's like, what? I said, you got to go outside. You can't do that. And so I made him go outside. There's a back door and that led out to the alley. This was at the Chopin Theater. And there was a bunch of snow on the ground. It was like 15 degrees outside and he's shirtless and shorts. And I was like, get out right now. And he did. He went out. Because actors understand, people in the theater understand, like if you freak out over something just to placate them, you do it. So he went outside. It was 15 degrees outside. There's snow all over the place. Barefoot too. He was barefoot. And so he goes outside and he does the deal. He spins around three times. He spits, he swears, and then he says, may I please come back into the theater? And I say, yes, you may. And I open the door and he comes back in. So I know that sounds ridiculous. I know it absolutely sounds ridiculous, but it's just, the theater stuff is weird. Like, never put your shoes on the dressing table. Never put your shoes on the dressing table.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, we were doing a show, an actor who was in the show and I directed the show. I came down to the green room, down to the basement where the green room was in the theater, to give them 10 minutes or whatever. I was there just to say hi to them, to the cast. And a friend of mine was away from the dressing table. And then he walked over to the dressing table and someone had put their shoes on the dressing table and he went nuts. He went nuts. And the person who put the shoes on the dressing table was like, I'm really sorry. Now, I don't know if there is a fix for that. It was a good show that night. I don't know. So it probably, but when you say the Scottish play, the fix is you have to go outside, spin around three times, spit, swear, and ask to be let back in. So I don't know if there is some sort of a fix for the shoes on the table. There's also the ghost light thing. Like you always leave a ghost light on.
I like the ghost light.
I do too.
I think that's like a really cool, eerie thing.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I like that. I like that one. Now, I directed a play called Toast of the Town, which is still one of my favorite things that I've ever directed. I think it's one of the funniest shows. My friend Scott Oaken wrote it. And it was a cast of, like, there were, like, 18 people in the show. And it was far slamming doors, in and out, that kind of thing. Really fast paced, lots of fast talking. And at the end of the play, it ends with this insanely long sequence of a woman giving birth and every character running in and out of the operating room. And at one point, all the characters surrounding the gurney and moving the gurney back and forth. It was really...
Real screwball stuff.
Completely. And that final scene that in Toast of the Town is my proudest achievement as a director, because I choreographed the whole thing and I had all the entrances and exits. But it's the play itself, Toast of the Town, is about a theater company putting up a play. And the whole Scottish play thing is part of the play. Because, you know, we kind of like every, you know, all of the cliches of theater and putting up a play were on display in Toast of the Town. That's what the whole thing was. Scott wanted to write a play about how ridiculous it is to put up a play. And it was just a fast-paced, complete, crazy, totally Marx Brothers influenced door slamming farce. Because, you know, Scott was like, you know, putting up a play is ridiculous. And so I want to write a play about how ridiculous it is to put up a play. And so one of the things that is ridiculous in the world of theater are the superstitions that we're talking about. And the whole the whole Scottish play thing, he wrote into the play. And one of the things is at one point, one of the characters is about to say the name of the play. He goes, and then they go, no, you know, and so they stop him. You can't say it. Don't ever say it. It's bad luck, blah, blah, blah. And so at one point late in the play, this character, the actor in Toast of the Town, has to say it. And he says it, you know, and he says it like three or four times. And every time he says it, something crashes backstage or a light goes out. So that's part of the play. And, the actor who played it, because we put that show up twice. We put it up once in its original run, and then on the 20th anniversary of the Factory Theater, we brought back the show. They picked the shows that they wanted to remount, so I went back and directed it again. And so both actors who had to play that role were kind of freaking out that they had to say it in the play, even though we weren't doing the Scottish play. So both times I directed the show, I didn't let him say it until first preview. I just did. I was like, you can't say it. Say something else. And then at first preview, they say it. And like, there was a gasp in the audience. He said it. And then, of course, it was fine. It turned out to be fine. But yeah, I'm such an idiot. I mean, so superstitious about that. I don't even say it. Like, you can hear me. I've not even said the name of the play because I won't say it.
I mean, what was the name of Macbeth?
See? That's not cool, man.
That's not cool. I fear no Scotsman.
Okay. All right. But anyway, so I'm watching the night before's Colbert.
Mm.
And it was James McAvoy and Stephen King.
Oh, wow.
Stephen King's got a new book out, his 61st book.
Oh, yeah. I saw that he published
61st book.
Jeez.
And so it just so happens, coincidentally, you know, that McAvoy was there and he's in it. So McAvoy played the titular Scottish king. And so they're in the Ed Sullivan Theater. And the minute that Colbert said, hey, you played, I went, no. I was like, no, you can't. And then he said it. And then McAvoy said it too. Yeah, well, I think because he was talking about how he talked to Patrick Stewart, who played the part, and Ian McKellen, who played the part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that was the story that they were telling. And they were dropping the name back and forth. I'm like, you're in the Ed Sullivan Theater. You can't.
Suddenly an audience member dropped dead.
Yeah, people were falling out of the balcony. But I know it's completely irrational and stupid, and I know that's a lot of people would think superstitions are. But some people are superstitious. They're superstitious. And today is Friday the 13th, and there are a lot of people. There is an actual term, and I don't know what it is. I can't remember what it is, but there's an actual term for the fear of the number 13.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to some people, it's real. And I'm not hedging bets, that's all. I just like, hey, how does it hurt to not walk around a, you know, to walk around on a ladder?
The term is triskaidekaphobia.
Right, triskaidekaphobia.
Yeah.
That's the fear of the number 13. So, it's Friday the 13th. We're talking about superstitions. Are you superstitious? 312-981-7200. All right, welcome back. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, Friday morning. Yeah! And we've got all the regular Friday features straight out of context. Don't have any Nick D Show spies this week, but we will have Vic's Picks, and You Big Dummy, and Fly Jams Friday, all coming up for your regular Friday morning here on 720 WGN. It's also Friday the 13th. Oh! And we're going to discuss the Friday the 13th movie series. That's right. But before that, we are talking about superstitions, and are you superstitious? We would love to hear from you, and what specifically are you superstitious about? 312-981-7200 for talk or text. We also have some really bizarre superstitions from around the world and the meaning behind them. Like, for instance, in India, trimming your nails at night is not good. There are several grooming-related superstitions in India, including the belief that it is bad luck to trim one's nails at night. Historically, people typically tried to avoid using sharp objects at night to avoid hurting themselves in low light. It is also considered bad luck to get a haircut on a Saturday in India. Is that the day the regular barber's off and they have like the apprentice in?
That's going to be a bad cut.
Is that what's happening? What's the Like, it's really not a good time to go into a hospital or be in a hospital in June or, like, late June or something like that, because that's when a lot of the interns are in and the doctors take time off. That was that thing that I had heard, that's kind of the worst time to be in the hospital.
It's actually called the July effect.
July effect.
The July effect, sometimes referred to as the July phenomenon, is a perceived increase in the risk of medical errors and surgical complications that occurs in association with the time of year in which U.S. medical school graduates begin their residency.
That's what. Okay, then I was right. I was wrong with the month.
But that's what it is.
All right. Okay. All right. Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a question about your theatrical superstition, and I guess all superstitions, which is, why are they true? Like, I'm trying to imagine that maybe in some mystical realm, there's a god of fear who sits there saying, I don't like it when actors put their shoes on the dressing table. I don't like it when anyone says the name of the Scottish play, except in a certain context. Therefore, I will curse anyone who does these things that displease me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where this stuff comes from, Mark. I don't know. I think a lot of people who are not superstitious ask that same question. Who go, I don't understand where this comes from. Why does it exist? But there are people out there who believe in it. I just don't want to. I just do it because I don't want to take any chances. I don't necessarily. I'm just like, all right, I'm just not going to do it. It's easy to walk around a ladder. You know what I mean?
And you don't want to be shattering mirrors.
No,
or
I don't want
stuff
to...
like. And don't spill the salt. You know, that's just a waste of good salt.
Yeah.
I mean, these things just seem so arbitrary and illogical.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I know. I mean, but there are a lot of people out there who believe in superstitions. Yep. So I don't know. All right, Mark. Thanks.
Have a good show.
All right,
and
take care.
Macbeth.
Yeah. There you go. I knew he was going to say that. I knew he was going to. Well, the bad luck's going to go to him. So.
Nice one, Mark.
Yeah, I knew he was going to say it. As soon as he started, like, you know, talking about how he doesn't, you know, superstitions are arbitrary, and I knew he was going to say the name of the Scottish play. I knew it.
Yeah.
So, all right. How about in Russia, putting empty bottles on the ground? Placing empty bottles on the ground is considered good luck in Russia. The superstition comes from a legend involving Russian soldiers in the 19th century. According to the Moscow Times, while the soldiers were in Paris, they were able to save money on alcohol by hiding their empty bottles on the ground rather than leaving them on the table. as they were being charged by the empty bottles they left behind. Oh, of course it's a booze-related good luck. That's pretty funny that it's related to booze.
Well, and there's your answer, Mark. Some of these superstitions come from things that happened.
Yeah, drunk. Okay, we're going to take a break here. It's Friday the 13th. We'll break down all the Friday the 13th movies, all 12 of them. That's coming up. And we're talking about superstitions right now from around the world and what they mean and why they happen. And are you superstitious? 312-981-7200. The news is coming.
I put a spell on you.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the WGN Skyline studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Regular Friday features coming up. We have no Nick D Show spies, but listen closely. And if I'm mentioned at any time during the week, you always jot down the name, the time, who said it. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. But we do have Straight Out of Context, and we've got You Big Dummy. Vic's Picks, and of course, Fly Jams Friday. All the regular features. But it is Friday the 13th. We are actually going to go through all the Friday the 13th movies and rank them. Tom will be better at this than I am. Because, you know, I've only seen each of the Friday the 13th. I've seen the first one a couple of times, and I've seen the 3D one a couple of times. But outside of that, I've only seen, each one of them once. So, but it's also Friday the 13th, which means it's a superstitious day. And so we're talking about some superstitions that are kind of bizarre from around the world and what they mean. Like, for instance, knocking on wood in Europe. People in the U.S. often use the phrase knock on wood to ward off bad luck, although this superstition is said to have originated in Europe. In the medieval period, many churches claimed to have pieces of Jesus's cross. Church officials would say that knocking on the wood would bring good luck. Okay. Well, that's a thing that's not exclusive to Europe. People do that here.
Yeah, but it's like it's more religious in Europe generally. Okay. Here it's just like any piece of wood. In Europe you generally want to do it in a church.
Okay. In Turkey, chewing gum at night. Some people in Turkey will never chew gum after the sun goes down. According to Turkish legend, when a person chews gum at night, it turns into the flesh of the dead. That's pretty cool. As a result, people are strongly advised against chewing gum after dark in Turkey. The exact origin of this morbid superstition is unclear. Although our guess is that most people would rather not risk it. Turns into the flesh of the dead. Wow, man.
Those Turks are intense.
Wow. 773 area code says, being very superstitious, I avoid kissing in doorways, walking under ladders, or placing shoes on a table. Hey, you've seen Drugstore Cowboy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know in Drugstore Cowboy, it's bad luck to put a hat on a bed. You remember that whole whole thing? Okay, so a buddy of mine, Beaver, as I've mentioned before, Mike Byer, he was in a frat at Northwestern. He's got a big brain. Look at the big brain on him at Northwestern. you know who else went to Northwestern?
Who?
Cheeto Fingers.
No way.
She was a Northwestern grad.
Oh, you know some real brainiacs,
yeah,
man.
She's got a master's, too, and she still chews the Cheeto dust off her fingers. But I'll tell you the story in a couple of minutes. This story involves Drugstore Cowboy and it involves superstition. So we're talking about superstition. 708 area code says all this talk about Candyman with this new movie and it being filmed in Chicago. At least to this question, would you look in the mirror and say his name five times? Yeah, I like Tony Todd. I'd love him to pop in. But that's not the Candyman is a variation on a different superstition. It's a girl's name. And it's three times. You're supposed to, like, if you look in the mirror and say this girl's name three times, she's supposed to appear. And I can't remember her name. But that's the movie Candyman is a variation on that. The Candyman thing didn't exist before they made the movie. It was a girl's name. Mary something. I think it was Mary something. Like, if you look in the mirror three times, if you look in the mirror, I guess to turn the light out, you look in the mirror, and you say her name three times, she appears. But that's where Candyman came from, was that superstition. So, I don't know. So anyway, my buddy's in a frat at Northwestern. He comes in, and the brothers are all sitting around, and they're watching Drugstore Cowboy. And so he comes in and goes, come on, man, let's go out. Let's go drinking. Because, you know, that's what you do. You're in a frat, you drink. Even if you go to Northwestern, you get hammered.
Oh, yeah.
So he comes in, he's like, let's go. And so they're like, no, man, we're watching Drugstore Cowboy. And he's like, just shut up. Just, come on, man, let's go out. You know, and he had already seen Drugstore Cowboy and all this stuff. But they were sitting in the frat, and they're like, no, shut up. We'll be out after the movie. We'll go out after the movie. And he's like, fine. So they're watching the movie. So he goes upstairs and puts hats on all their beds.
What a jerk. Come on.
Without telling them, he goes into each one of their rooms and puts hats on every bed. Put hat on every bed. And then he went out. He went out drinking. And when they showed up at the bar, apparently chaos ensued before they showed up at the bar. Like, the guys, they just started screaming because they had just watched Drugstore Cowboy.
Yeah.
And a major part of that movie involves the death of Heather Graham, in fact.
Yeah.
There's a hat on the bed.
A hat on the bed.
Yeah. That's a good movie.
Probably kicked his ass when they got to the
bar. they were laughing. I mean, it's a frat boys. That's what you do. But yeah, I love that one, man. He went up there, he went upstairs, put hats on all of their beds. That's one of my favorites. All right, here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, how about carrying the bride over the threshold?
Yeah.
I double checked. They said that one is that she doesn't appear anxious to lose her virginity, that her new husband is taking her to that moment.
Uh-huh.
But the one I always heard was that it goes back to Roman times, and that for many of these young ladies, it was their first time in a long dress, and she would be more apt to trip over the threshold, and that being an omen for bad luck. So it was easier to pick her up and carry her over the stone threshold.
Yeah. It's interesting where, you know, the variations on these origin stories. You know what I mean? Like, we were talking about break a leg, where that came from, like where that phrase came from, what's the story behind that? There's like seven or eight different stories for a lot of these. But it's always fun to try and figure out where they came from.
And then tradition, you're supposed to do it in the hotel when you go on your honeymoon, mm-hmm. and the first time you go into your new home.
Right. Right. Maybe that's why I was divorced twice. I didn't do it either time. Yeah. So, all right, Doc.
Keep believing it.
Thanks, man.
All right.
See you. Now, here's one that I do, and they say that this is out of the UK. Saying the word rabbit on the first day of the month. I do this one, but I do it because it goes back to, it goes back here at WGN, at least. It goes back to Wally Phillips. Because at the first day of each month, you would say rabbit, rabbit, rabbit. And I still do that. I still do that. The first day of every month, I say rabbit, rabbit, rabbit. And on my Facebook page, I post three pictures of rabbits. Every first day of the month. This good luck practice has been around for over 2,000 years, according to NPR, although it's only been recorded since the 19th century, with roots tracing back to the UK. According to legend, it's the first thing you say on the first day of the month is rabbit, rabbit. You'll have good luck for the rest of it. Alternately, if you forget to speak the magic words in the morning, you can say tibar, tibar, which is rabbit backwards, right before you go to bed that night. So if you forget to say it before you go to bed, you got to say tibar, tibar, tibar. Now, it says here twice, but I say it three times because Wally Phillips used to say it three times. So the first of the month, it's rabbit, rabbit, rabbit. How about this? Brazil, leaving your wallet or purse on the ground. Placing your wallet or purse on the ground in Brazil is said to bring bad financial luck. This superstition is also popular in other South American countries as well as the Philippines. Similarly, people in China commonly use the phrase that translates to, quote, a purse on the floor is money out the door, unquote, to warn against not valuing wealth. It may stem from the idea that putting money on the ground, the lowest point, could look careless or disrespectful. So don't put your wallet. Well, why would I put my wallet on the ground?
Yeah, I was going to say, it brings bad financial luck because people steal your wallet.
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't keep money in my wallet. I don't put my my money is on a money clip in my pocket, in my front pocket. I don't carry money. I haven't carried money in a wallet in I don't even know. I have a money clip. I've had a money clip forever. Yeah, so I don't care. I mean, you know, I've got credit cards and stuff and my ID and everything in my wallet, so it's important. Obviously, there's a lot of important stuff in my wallet. I just don't carry cash in it. But it, you know, actually it's gotten to the point where does anybody carry cash?
I mean, I carry small bills for tip.
Yeah, I've got small bills in my
But probably nothing larger than a tenner.
No question. Me too. I think the largest bill that I have on my money clip right now is a five. Because I use my debit card or a credit card. It's just, you know. And then like if I go out to a restaurant or if I go to the greatest restaurant on the planet, like the Gale Street Inn in Jefferson Park, everybody should go there. Everything, mm-hmm. The ribs, everybody loves the ribs, but everything else on the menu is great. Say hi to George. Tell him Nick sent you. George Karzis, who runs the place, fantastic. Gale Street Inn, greatest restaurant on the planet. When I go there, I leave the tip. I add it to the bill. So not even then do I pull out any cash. But anyway, wallet on the ground. But I would never put my wallet. Never put my wallet on the ground. Someone's going to kick it down a sewer. That would be my concern. Someone kicked my wallet into a sewer. Here's Lulu on WGN. Hi, Lulu.
Hey, Vic. I've got one, an address superstition. I bought a condo in Crystal Lake once with the address of 633, and I didn't pay attention until after I moved in, and people were having trouble finding it. And I started to notice that I was in like a square, and I started to notice that the other, there were townhouses mixed in, were even numbers. So I asked one of the original owners that was still there, I said, why is our address an odd number on the even side of the street? And they said when the condo was built, the next logical address should have been 666.
Oh, okay. All right, I see.
And somehow the developers or whatever talked the post office into letting them put this odd address on the even side of the street. It was really weird.
Oh, there you go. Because the address would have been 666.
Yep.
Yeah. And only a person named Damien could rent that.
Yeah.
All right, Lulu. Thank you, Lulu.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
That's another thing. Some buildings, this building does, but some buildings don't have a 13th floor.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
They go right from 12 to 14.
Mm-hmm.
What was the 1408?
Yeah.
Speaking of Stephen King, that was a good movie. A
very good movie.
And Cusack, that might be Cusack's last good movie.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, probably.
Because he's doing a lot of crap straight-to-video stuff now.
Yeah, which is weird.
773 area code says, when I was a kid, I was told if you are asleep and you hear someone call your name, never answer it until you are called a second time. I actually had this happen to me. Me and my brother had just dozed off. Our parents at Midway, just dropped off our parents at Midway, and I was home alone. I started snoozing off when I clearly heard someone call my name. And like a big dummy, I answered, yeah. And I realized I was home alone, and it put a chill down my spine realizing what I had done. Well, that's just like, that's, to me, it seems like you're dozing off and you get into a dream state. And, you know, that's when you hear things and see things. And
or it's a ghost.
Hey, by the way, you ever see the movie Dreamscape?
No.
Oh.
Dreamscape?
Come on, man. Dreamscape, Kate Capshaw, Dennis Quaid. It predates Inception by like 30 years. It's a great, Joseph Rubin, I think, is the director.
Yeah, Max von Sydow, Christopher Plummer.
It's a great movie, Dreamscape, man. came out the same year as Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was for some reason 1984 was a big year for like invading people's dreams. Dreamscape is a great movie.
All right, I'll add it to the list.
And again, it predates Inception by a lot of years, and Dennis Quaid's in it, so right there, it's worth seeing. You know what? I didn't get to see that Dennis Quaid "I'm Crazy" movie.
Oh, the,
where they move into the house,
the intruder.
And, yeah, yeah, I just didn't get to see it.
I want. Yeah, it looked like decent fun.
It was Dennis Quaid acting like a nut. And that. And I also haven't. Yeah, I got to watch this. It's available now on demand. I'm going to watch it this weekend. Octavia Spencer killing teenagers. What the hell was that? Ma.
Oh, Ma.
Got to watch that. 708 area code says, that's Amy Louise says, good evening, Nick. One of my favorite episodes of The Black Adder is one in which Edmund takes great delight in torturing two old ham actors by constantly repeating the name of the Scottish play. Every time he says it, they have to perform silly little superstitious ritual. I've been a community theater actress for years, and this scene always sends me falling off the couch laughing. You can find the scene at YouTube. It says, don't mention Scottish play / Black Adder. Enjoy your show very much. Thank you. That's pretty funny. 301 area code says, if I put shoes on a table, it would be bad luck, all right, because my wife would probably kill me. Hold on a minute. Hold it. Wait a minute.
All right.
Hold it.
Nice.
This dude freaked out when he saw the shoes on the table. He on the dressing table. He freaked out. I wish I could have been in that frat house when those guys saw the hats on the beds. I just still think that's one of the funniest things ever.
Dudes screaming over hats.
Like they 2 minutes earlier, they had just finished watching a movie where Heather Graham dies because somebody put a hat on a bed.
Mm. Your buddy's a psycho, man.
No, he's a nice guy.
he just wanted to go out.
In Serbia, here's one. Spilling water behind someone. Spilling water may seem like it would be a sign of bad luck, although the opposite is actually true in Serbia. It's a common Serbian superstition to believe that spilling water behind someone will bring them good luck. People will often spill some water behind a loved one who is about to go on a trip or a job interview in order to wish them luck. The water is thought to be lucky because it represents fluidity and motion. Okay. Who's going to clean it up? Also, don't get my wallet wet while it's down there. In Portugal, walking backwards. Some people believe that walking backwards may connect you to the devil.
The devil?
It is considered very unlucky to walk backwards in Portugal because doing so allegedly lets the devil know where you are and where you're going. What?
So if you're walking forwards, he's like, I don't know.
Where did he go? Oh, there he is.
He started walking
started
backwards.
To walk backwards. Now I know where he is.
Now I can do my evil deeds.
Japan. In Japan, tucking your thumbs in a cemetery. In Japan, people are often advised to tuck their thumbs into their fists when walking through cemeteries. What? The reasoning is simple. In Japanese, the word for thumb directly translates to parent finger. The legend warns that tucking your parent finger will protect your parents from death. Parent finger?
That was my band's name in high school.
What's going on there? In Germany, toasting with water. The superstition of believing that toasting with a glass of water brings bad luck or even death is commonly held in Germany, although the tradition has its roots going back to ancient Greece. According to Greek mythology, spirits of the dead would often drink from the river, which is named after the goddess of forgetfulness, and after drinking from the river, the spirits would forget about their lives on Earth before they would just enter the underworld. Oh, man. How about in Sweden? Manhole covers marked with a K or an A. You might not pay much attention to manhole covers, but in Sweden, some people believe that the symbols on them can bring good or bad luck. A legend has it that stepping on a manhole cover marked with a letter K is good luck because it represents the Swedish word for love. Stepping on a cover marked A, however, is believed to bring bad luck because it stands for the Swedish word for heartbreak. In reality, K stands for Kalvatten, which means clean water, and A stands for Avslapsfaten, which means sewage, although the superstitious are still careful where they step. Okay.
Impeccable Swedish, by the way.
Thank you very much. I watch Sesame Street. Or the Muppets, sorry. Was he on Sesame Street? No, he's just on the Muppets.
Yeah, just on the Muppets. Muppets.
Okay. Schmorgy Gorgy. All right. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio here on a Friday morning. All the regular Friday features, straight out of context. We got no Nick D Show spies, but keep listening. If I'm mentioned, we'll do it next week. We've got You Big Dummy and Fly Jams Friday. And, of course, we'll learn about what Vic is listening to with Vic's Picks. Coming up also, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. Because it's Friday the 13th, we will also be talking about the Friday the 13th movies, but we're talking about some superstitions from around the world that are a little bit weird. Like in Rwanda, women eating goat meat. Local folklore advises women against eating goat meat because it allegedly causes facial hair growth as well as stubbornness. This is weird because there's an infomercial on right now that is a device that takes the hair off of women's faces.
Has your wife been eating too much goat meat?
Well, it's called the Derma Flash. It's a half an hour thing of women, basically, they're showing close-ups of women, like, using this thing and seeing all the hair being peeled off their face. And now I'm reading this thing about goat meat causing facial hair growth on women. The timing there was just strange.
Well, it's that kind of day. You got a full moon.
Yeah.
You got a full harvest moon, no less. Yeah. And it's Friday the 13th. Come on.
Maybe I'm not going to go see that Linda Ronstadt movie tonight. Maybe I'll just stay in. It says, however, some people have also offered up the theory that men created the superstition so they could have more meat for themselves. I bet that's exactly what happened.
All that delicious goat meat.
That's right. You ever have goat?
I have not.
Good.
There used to be a place. It's a Dollar Tree now, which is kind of sad, but there used to be a place right around the corner from my condo that was like a specialty grocery, and they would sell goat meat.
Yeah.
And I always told myself I'd go get it, but I never took the opportunity.
There was an African restaurant on Broadway. That's where I had it, and it was delicious.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of goat cheese.
Yeah, sure.
So I imagine the rest of the goat probably tastes pretty good.
Yeah, man. In China, the number four. Some people in China avoid anything having to do with the number four. Why the number four specifically? The pronunciation of four in Chinese sounds similar to the word for death. Unsurprisingly, this makes many people believe that the number four is a sign of bad luck.
Yeah, I got that a lot when I was a kid because I was born on November 4th.
Oh, boy.
But my brother had a very, very lucky birthday because he was born on August 8th, 2000. And so when the Beijing Olympics came around, it started on 8808, which is a very lucky number. And a lot of my dad's colleagues in Asia sent us gifts because they were like, this is a lucky child.
Well, you know, the first night game at Wrigley was 8888, but it was rained out.
Yeah,
so I don't know.
That did not go so well.
I don't know. I was there too, man.
Yeah,
I was there. I was there the next night too for the actual game that was played. But yeah, of course it was rained out. You know what I mean? Yeah, everybody was like, "God doesn't want lights at Wrigley."
we are in defiance of natural law.
I grew up in that neighborhood, and there was a period of time when people would have a sign that looked like the Wrigley Field, the sign on Wrigley, the iconic sign at the front of Wrigley, that said no lights, and they were in the windows of houses and apartments all down Addison and in the neighborhood.
They were really that against it?
Oh my God, yes. Oh yes, 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 yes. The neighborhood did not want lights at Wrigley, and we had a sign, but we didn't put it up. Well, we lived on the second floor, so that's one, I guess. But people they were everywhere in the neighborhood. No lights. I bet people still have those old signs.
I believe it. I would believe it.
Yeah. So that was a big thing, like in the late 70s and early 80s, everybody had the no light signs in the neighborhood. So, okay, we'll break. When we come back, we got more superstitions to talk about, Friday the 13th movies, and then the regular features. enough cowbell.
Really got to bump that cowbell.
You can't hear this song anymore without thinking cowbell.
Which is too bad, because it's a great song. It's a
terrific song. Also featured in the original Halloween. But, yeah, no, I mean, cowbell. I remember watching that episode live. And that, to me, wasn't the funniest sketch that night. I mean, obviously it's gone on to become legendary. I mean, obviously, more cowbell. I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell. So it's great. It's a great sketch. It's legendary. But the funniest sketch that night, the thing, and it was a great show. I can't remember who the musical guest was, but it was a great show. But they did a sketch where Tim Meadows was a census taker, and he shows up at Christopher Walken's door to do a census, to take the census on him. It's one of the funniest things. It's really, truly one of the funniest things I've ever seen on SNL. And that was a great show. They did a Continental, of course, because when Walken hosts, you got to do the Continental. But that sketch where Tim Meadows goes to Christopher Walken's door to do the census, I'm telling you, man, it's truly one of the funny. Can you see if you can find it? So we're talking about superstitions. I'll do a couple more superstitions, then we're going to talk about the Friday the 13th movies. So here's one in South Korea, sleeping in a room with a running fan. Fan death, quote-unquote, is a widespread fear among people in South Korea. As a result, many South Koreans will never sleep in a closed room with a fan on. It is commonly believed that prolonged exposures to fans causes hypothermia, loss of water in the body, and even asphyxiation. Well, I sleep with a fan. I can't sleep without a fan. I have to have a fan on. I have a fan at the foot of my bed that blows. It's aimed right at me. So I could not make it, and I would not be able to live in South Korea. In Spain, eating grapes on New Year's Eve instead of downing the traditional counting down, having the traditional champagne flutes, Spaniards traditionally stuff 12 grapes in their mouth at the stroke of midnight. The 12 grapes represent the 12 months of the year, and the Spanish tradition is meant to bring you luck in the new year. You know, at Simon's, when we would count down New Year's Eve, you'd eat herring at midnight. And I love herring. I love it, especially the one in the cream with the jar that comes with the cream sauce. Oh, I could eat
herring's
that all
good.
There were people who were disgusted by it. Like, we'd be in the bar, they're like,
really?
Ugh, yeah.
Oh, herring's good.
Herring's delicious.
Yeah, you have that tatties in herring.
It's delicious. Did you find it? Were you able to find the census taker?
They don't have it available.
Oh, man.
Not the complete.
Does it show up if you do census taker Christopher Walken SNL?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like a little bit of it, I think. I'll try this.
All right.
Time at night where I'm just asleep. Hours, you know. It's ridiculous.
No, it's not that ridiculous, actually. Miss Leonard, do you own or rent this apartment?
Sure. You have to ask one of the other 79 people.
You mean your wife?
Yeah.
Well, could I talk to her?
She won't answer you. She's a bobcat.
You've got a bobcat in there?
Well, I have a permit.
There you go. This is a permit to run a nail salon.
Wrong one. Hold on.
Okay. You get the idea. She's a bobcat.
Do you rent or own this apartment? I don't know.
Sure. Truly, that was the funniest sketch that night. It was the same. That was the same night as Cowbell, and Cowbell's gone down in history as one of the greatest sketches in SNL history. But I think that I think the census taker one was just genius. So, hey, by the way, they announced three new cast members for this season of SNL.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I can't remember. I will have their names memorized before the premiere. I promise. And it's they've hired, this is unbelievable. The show's been on for 45 years. And they've hired their first Asian cast member. 45.
Wow.
Yeah. First Asian cast member.
Wow. So,
yeah. But I'll tell you what that means, though, because they got hired. Heidi Gardner's no longer a featured player.
Nice.
She's actually a regular. She's a regular cast member.
There you go.
Then we'll no longer say featuring Heidi Gardner. She will be a part of the cast. I love her very much. I would do anything for Heidi Gardner. We need to get her on the show. Can we try?
Yeah, we can. We'll get her.
Because I adore her. I adore her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, excuse to get her on is now that she's going to be a regular cast member, not featured.
So. Yeah. No, we'll get her. Because I watched a sketch with her recently. I think she was in when they did Floribama Shore.
Oh, my God.
Was in the middle of a hurricane. And her and A.D. Bryant find out that they're both Hulk Hogan's kids.
It's hilarious. Hilarious. She's great, man. She's just great. I can't every week, even if she's in a bad sketch, she's good in it. Like that was her first season was one of the best first seasons I've ever seen anybody have in the history of that show. I think it was probably the best first season that anybody's had since Kate McKinnon. And that's saying something. And that's why I feel so good about Heidi Gardner, because inevitably Kate McKinnon is going to leave. I can't believe she hasn't left already.
Yeah. Well, she's just so good.
Yeah.
She's
Keenan's coming back for his 17th season.
Only 17?
16 years. He's been on the show 16 years.
I know. I thought it was longer.
It'll be the 17th season, and he holds the record for longest run.
I hope his final sketch is what's up with that.
Yeah, but they'd have to bring Hader in.
You know they do it.
Because Lindsey Buckingham, man. You can't have the sketch without Lindsey Buckingham.
And you got to have Jason Sudeikis.
Sudeikis has to be there. So does Jason. Well, Fred Armisen's still in the building because periodically he drums for Seth.
Mm-hmm.
The backup singers had changed, though. The backup singers, because they changed. Because Nassim Pedrad was one time.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny Slate did it one time, and then she was gone. But you got to have Sudeikis in the red tracksuit, doing the running doing the running man.
Yeah. If you don't think that Bill Hader and Jason Sudeikis wouldn't come back and do that
and sketch, Fred, yeah.
And Fred, they'd all do it for Keenan.
They would. I mean, after a run like that.
Yeah.
It's got to be the last thing that he does is they bring it back. And when the real Lindsey Buckingham showed up,
I was weeping with laughter.
Ridiculous.
Real.
I remember the first time I saw the first time they did What's Up With That, my ex-wife and we were on the floor laughing. And when it was over, I'm like, why was that so funny? It's like the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
And that's what's funny.
And every single time the hi-hat would start and he'd go, and he'd do that look, you know, his eyes would get big and wide. Funny. Every time the hi-hat would hit and he would do the eye thing, I'd fall off the couch. All right. So it's Friday the 13th. And there are 12 Friday the 13th movies. Now, Tom, you're a bigger fan of the series than I am.
Yes.
I'm looking at these rankings. Did you see these rankings?
I saw, yeah. I looked through it, and I think it's largely pretty accurate.
Okay.
In terms of, and now your mileage, you know, with everybody, your mileage with the series will vary. I mean, some people really think that there's only one actually good one.
Yeah,
and the rest of them are just kind of schlock, but which is not entirely wrong.
They're going in order from worst to best here. So coming in the bottom is Jason X. Now that was Jason's in Space, right?
Yeah, yeah, that was their half-assed attempt to try and put some sort of life into this series, and it is pretty bad, but astounding on a level in terms of how bad it is. And that they thought that this was the gimmick that was going to save the Friday the 13th series. Like, putting Jason in space, and he's like an android.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. And it's not even fun to watch, really. It is fascinating, though.
I don't remember this. Cronenberg has a cameo in it? According to this, David Cronenberg has a cameo at the beginning of the movie.
Does he?
It says, it's sure the movie gets points for the Cronenberg cameo in the beginning. But the rest is
honestly
nonsense.
I think I've seen this maybe once or twice.
I've only seen it once, and yeah. I don't remember Cronenberg being in it.
Yeah.
All right, coming in next on the bottom tier is Friday the 13th remake from 2009. Well, which was terrible.
Yeah, it went over about as well as the Nightmare on Elm Street remake,
which was also terrible. But shot here,
yeah, and the Rob Zombie Halloween.
Oh,
you know,
don't even.
There was just this attempt in the early 2000s. They were like, "Well, we got to get horror back on track."
Don't even get me started on the Rob Zombie movies.
Mm.
Don't. Because, you know, I'll be breaking FCC laws if I'm going to speak freely. Okay, coming next on the lower tier is Friday the 13th, A New Beginning. Now, I get these all confused. Now, this one says, in final chapter, we're introduced to the young Tommy Jarvis, who becomes the hero of the series for three installments, the second of which being this bizarre, outlandishly harebrained reconfiguration, which sets Jason's fatal shenanigans in a home for troubled teenagers on Crystal Lake. The tone here is also pretty spot on, straddling horror movie and sex comedy. Don't remember this one at all.
Yeah,
a narrative decision so profoundly dumb that it taints the even more juvenile passages in the film, such as a sequence where a couple sings to one another while the man is taking a long crap in a porta potty. The porta potty. I don't remember that at all. No memory of that one at all. I get them all confused. Which one has a sleeping bag in it?
Oh God, the sleeping bag.
Because that's like one of the best kills in movie history. No. I will give that movie that one. When he slams that body, when he slams that sleeping bag against the tree, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Let me see if I, because that's the problem with this series. It's so long that
yeah.
It's impossible.
Well, maybe
to keep
they
it all
haven't explained here. All right, here. How about this one? Next one is Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. Okay, here's the thing. He's not in New York for 90% of the movie. He's in Manhattan for 5 minutes. The rest of the time, he's on a boat, like putting head people. I remember the one kill. He puts a guy's head through a big pipe, like he grabs him by the back of the head and smashes his head into a pipe. I remember my friend Scott and I went to go see it. And I said like right before, because we were just like, this is just a piece of crap. And I'm sitting next to Scott. And when he grabs the dude by the back of his head, because he's in like the bowels of the ship. And so he grabs the dude by the back of the head. And I lean over to Scott and I go, hey, do you like pipes? And then he smashes his head through. So it was like Jason saying, do you like pipes? And Scott just started laughing his ass off because my timing was actually perfect. I didn't know what was, you know, how long it was going to take. But as soon as I said it, he put the guy's head through a pipe. So do you like pipes became like a thing that we would say. And so, okay, so this is what happened. This is really, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
So we used to go to Beetlefest every year. Every year, all 3 days, Hyatt Regency O'Hare, Beetlefest. We're there every single year. And every year, they would show the Beatles movies, like either in one of the ballrooms or a side room or whatever, and they would always show Magical Mystery Tour, which is terrible. But, of course, the music is great. So we would go down, but we would bring a cooler full of beer, and we'd sit in the ballroom and drink and watch the movie. And they would usually show Magical Mystery Tour on Sunday night late, like when everything was... Because everybody hates that. Everybody can't stand that. It's right. Just such a weird thing. Not even a movie. It was a TV special, but it was just so weird. So anyway, so the year that this Jason Takes Manhattan movie came out, it came out like a week before Beetlefest. And we were heavily into saying, do you like pipes? Like we were just saying it for no reason because it just became this thing. So it was a, do you like pipes? And my friends and I became like a stupid saying, you know, obviously people who were not part of our group would come in and hear us say,
yeah, it's just an inside
do you like
joke.
Pipes? And people would be like, what the hell are you talking about? So we were having some cocktails and some beers watching
Magical Mystery Tour.
And the song Flying, which is an instrumental, came on. You know, it goes, da-na-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na. Okay. So we're in the back of the theater or in the back of the ballroom and we're drinking. We've had a few, me and Scott and all our friends, and we've been saying, do you like pipes for all weekend and every week? And so we start going, do you like pipes?
Oh,
and we're singing it out loud. Do you like pipes? Do you like pipes? Do you? So we're doing the whole song. And it would be pipes, pipes. Do you like pipes? So we did this, and everybody was just kind of looking. You know, the people in the ballroom were like looking in the back, and they were like, "What the hell is wrong with they? What?" So we did this, like, we would do this every year. It would happen like every year, and so finally, like one night, we went in, we sat down, flying started. And all the other people started going, "Do you like pipes?" And it became a thing. We actually got a room full of people at Beetlefest to start singing "Do You Like Pipes" during flying. And it became like an, I don't know if they still do it.
Do you think, did they ever ask about the origin of the pipes thing?
They didn't even know. People just, like, nobody asked. Like,
whatever.
We were just like, "Do you?" And it was all because of that murder in Jason Takes Manhattan. All right, we got a break. We'll come back. The rest of the Friday the 13th movies explained, and we'll figure out where the sleeping bag kill, what movie that one's in. All right, it's Friday the 13th. We're talking about the Friday the 13th movies, and after the 3:30 news, Vic's Picks and the regular features here on a Friday morning. So, just imagine, do you like, you know, you like pipes? So that's the, and then pipes. Do you like pipes? So that's what we, that's it. And I don't know, I have no idea why people started singing along with us, because we were just drunk idiots who had seen a Friday the 13th movie a couple of days earlier. Okay, we are going through the Friday the 13th movies. Let's we'll get this done by 3:30. So part 7 is The New Blood. And this is telepathic. This is the girl who's telepathic, right?
Yeah.
That, yes, but that's the one that has the great kill in it, right?
Yeah, that's got the first sleeping bag kill.
Wait a minute, there's more than one?
Yeah, they do it again in Jason X, but he has two people in sleeping bags, and he beats one against a wall, and then beats the other person with the person in the sleeping bag.
See, you, like, can't do that. I mean, you leave that alone.
Yeah, no, it's probably one of the greatest slasher kills of all time.
Without question.
Because it's just so insane.
Without question. I mean, I don't even remember anything else from the movie. I remember the girl being telepathic, and I remember it sucking. Well, I think all the Friday the 13th movies suck, so the...
Yeah, I mean, I said, it's for a very specific type of audience that, like, just wants to see a kill count.
Yeah. Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday.
I think this is a little too high on the list, honestly.
Yeah, I don't even remember it.
I'd put New Blood above that.
Okay. Now, this one I liked, Freddy vs. Jason. I like Freddy vs. Jason. It's the only movie with Jason Voorhees that I like.
It's very ridiculous.
It is, but Ronnie Yu directed the hell out of it. I thought it was great, and I thought they captured both styles of those movies.
Yeah.
Like, the Freddy stuff felt like a Freddy movie, and the Jason stuff felt like a Jason movie, even down to the music cues and everything, and the way it was shot. Number 5, Friday the 13th, Part 2. This was potato sack head.
Yeah.
Instead of, this was, pre, you know, because the hockey mask didn't come in until 3.
Yeah. And this is the first time that Jason Voorhees is actually,
he's the killer. Yeah. The original Friday the 13th, they put it 4. Doesn't that seem weird? Shouldn't it be number 1?
I mean, it depends on how you feel about the franchise.
Okay.
It depends, like, because obviously it's the original, but I mean, it's not the iconic hockey mask stuff. So if you're a big fan of these, you kind of, like, I personally prefer the stuff. And I love this one. I think it's a great twist and it plays really well today. But, like, you know, when you're thinking about the iconic stuff, that's when he gets a hockey mask. So the next 3 are pretty much perfect.
Friday the 13th, Part 3, I will say I enjoyed that one only because of the 3D with the eyeball popping out. And then next one here, number 2 on the list, is Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. I don't remember that one. And then Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter. This is the Corey Feldman one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the one where like, he gets slammed in the side of the head with a machete, and then he falls down and slides down the blade of the machete while it's in his head?
I think so. It's been a while.
Because that's a quality kill.
Yeah. And this one's just fun because Corey's in it.
Yeah. All right, well, they say that's the best. I got to sneeze. But I think that's the one. If you can confirm during the break, during the news, if Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, does have the machete into Jason's head, and then he slides down on the machete's blade, which is fantastic. That's the only thing I remember loving that. So, all right. It's Friday the 13th, everybody, and those are the movies. And we're going to take a break, and after the news, we'll jump into Vic's picks. We'll find out what he's been listening to in the music world. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We are live in the WGN Skyline studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Friday morning. All the regular features are coming up straight out of context. No Nick D Show spies this week, but keep listening. If anybody mentions me during the week, jot down the day, the time, who said it, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We got You Big Dummy and Fly Jams Friday all coming up. But right now, we want to kick off our regular features with Vic's Picks. This, of course, Vic Vaughn wanted to educate himself on albums, so he decided that on music. So he decided that he was going to go through the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone, and listen to every single one of them. And every week, we check in with Vic, and we find out what his picks are. And we usually talk about two albums that he's been listening to during the week. Let's make it official and hear the theme.
One hundred albums. One Vic Vaughn. It's Vic's Picks on the Nick DiGilio Show.
Well, the rain exploded. There we go, and it is time for Vic's Picks. All right, Vic, you've been going through this list. And what do we got for this week?
Number 10, self-titled The Beatles, also known as The White Album. This is their ninth studio album. And I always like to mention the studios that worked on it at EMI and Trinity Studios in London from late May through mid-October. This is 1968. It was released the next month in November by Apple Records, their own record label. So this was a release right around the time, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, please. We can now call this right around the time would be maybe the beginning of the end of The Beatles, I guess.
Yeah,
so after the release of their album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which I haven't heard yet, but it's coming up real soon, it appears on the number one spot on this list we're going through. But so with the White Album, from what I read, the Beatles were trying to top what's now considered by many, not all, to be their best work. They would the best work that they would ever produce. That's not your opinion, correct?
No, my favorite Beatles album is a tie. I know that's a cheap way of doing it. It's Revolver and Rubber Soul.
Commit, Revolver and Rubber Soul.
Okay,
that's
if
right.
I had to pick one, it would be Revolver.
Okay.
Revolver is my favorite Beatles album.
All right, good. I got you on the record with that one. I haven't heard either one of those, so...
They weren't on the list?
Wait, which one were they again?
Revolver and Rubber Soul.
They're on the list. I think they're ahead. At least one of them's ahead. I think I have two more Beatles albums to go through. But
okay. Because if they're not on the list of the top 100 albums of all time, then that list is wrong.
Yeah. Don't quote me because I've listened to dozens and dozens.
Right, no,
so,
I understand.
Yeah,
I
but
understand.
I don't think so. I don't think I've listened to either one of those yet.
Okay.
I've listened to some good ones, though. Some good Beatles ones. Some great ones. So I'm also reading about how at this time they were having a lot of disagreements as professionals, as musicians. Ringo had even quit temporarily by this time, and what you can kind of end up with is this. At times, it seems a little disjointed. Maybe the album. Still great songs, right? I mean.
It's a great album, but you can hear in the album, you could hear the band splintering apart.
Yeah.
You could hear the John songs from the Paul songs and even the George songs from the Ringo songs. You could just feel the band separating. That's what it feels like when you listen to it. It's still a great record, though.
Yes, exactly. And that was pretty much what I... kind of my review after listening to it for the very first time was that it was a little disjointed but awesome. Every song I thought was, well, almost every song I thought was awesome, but it was disjointed. At one point, Paul McCartney singing about having in the middle of a public street an intimate encounter, and a couple songs later I think it's two songs later, John Lennon singing about a very touching and beautiful song about his mother. So it's a disjointed, I think, at times, but there's reasons for that from what I've read, and it's a bit strange, but I love it. I love the album. Many, many classic Beatles songs on this album that some of them that I recognized, but some of them I'd heard before. So although I never listened to the entire album before. It's a double album, right? It's got, I think, 18 or 19 songs on it, but let's start with Obladi Oblada. So catchy.
Right.
So that was, I had to read a little bit about that because it did sound a little Jamaican to me. And it was when Jamaican music was gaining popularity in the UK or the US. But you know, well, no, in the UK is when, I guess, when this is when Jamaican music was kind of, that was written in a Jamaican ska style. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, very much.
Okay. Okay. But it caused a big riff in the studio, this song I read. A big argument, shouting match, an engineer quit over it. John Lennon was not a fan of that song. In fact...
No, he wasn't.
No. I found it interesting. In fact, I found this really interesting. If you listen to the piano intro, it sounds like... well, I read this. These aren't my words, but the critic I was reading said it sounded like it's a theater-style piano. And I read that John Lennon sat down during one of their recording sessions, and he bangs that out like that in that style. He bangs it out real hard and fast on the piano, and he says, this is the way this song should be played. And they ended up liking it, and that's how they used it, you know, that faster, louder style in the studio. Get a little work here from George Harrison in with this next one, my favorite song on this album, a song called While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Harrison wrote it, and before we listen to it, for this studio version on the White Album, he invited his very close friend that I've learned since studying this album, widely regarded as one of the top couple of guitarists of all time, Eric Clapton, to overdub the lead guitar part for this song. And Tom's got a little cut of it. My Guitar Gently Weeps. Yeah.
Clapton. Yeah. They were more than just buddies.
Mm-hmm. Very close. What do you mean?
Have you ever heard the name Patty Boyd?
Yeah.
I read about this.
They shared a woman.
Not exactly the same time, right?
No, well, yeah.
Or maybe. To make sure the record's correct, did they, because what I read didn't really indicate that they were having like an open relationship.
No, they were, Patty had been with both of them.
Right, but.
And they had both wrote songs about her. Derek Domino's album is essentially all about that. And there's a song, I don't know if you, did you have Derek and the Dominoes? That had to be on the list, right?
No.
There's a song on there called Layla.
That's a song by Eric Clapton, right?
Yeah. Well, it's Derek and the Dominoes, but it is Eric Clapton, yes.
But I've heard that song. You're saying that's about this woman?
That's about Patty Boyd.
Oh, wow. My Layla, my daughter's name, Layla. Play that sometimes.
Well, and a reference to last week, Something is also about Patty Boyd.
That's right.
Wait, what?
The song Something.
By George.
You're kidding.
No, that's about Patty Boyd.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's two amazing songs.
No, absolutely. They were more than friends, man. There was a lot going on between Clapton and George Harrison.
Their friendship did not crumble from that.
No.
What I read.
It did not.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. You know what? And also, I just came across this on Facebook yesterday. A friend of mine posted a YouTube video of Prince playing that solo with, I want to say, I saw it yesterday. I want to say it was Tom Petty, but I could be wrong.
It is Tom Petty.
Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne.
Yep.
I want to say Donnie Harrison was in, or Danny, however you say it, was in there.
Well, I'm not going to act amazing. I know who they are.
It's amazing. Well, yeah, here's the thing about Prince. Prince was never appreciated as much as he should have been just as a guitarist.
Right.
Because he was an unbelievable guitarist. We know he was an amazing singer-songwriter. That's all, and a great performer. But that guy could play the guitar, and if you watch him play if you watch him, that solo is unbelievable.
He shreds.
It's
ridiculous, man. Yeah. And that really, I got into that video, and then I got into reading about Prince, and I kind of messed myself up for the next album we're going to do because I didn't give myself enough time. But that, yeah, amazing. That song that George Harrison wrote, Clapton played the lead, and then watching Prince do a cover of it, it's blew my mind. Now, next, here's a little from another song widely regarded there's a lot of stuff written about this song, but it's also considered one of the greatest songs on the album, Helter Skelter. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a McCartney song.
That's a Paul song.
That's a Paul song. And I learned that there's some thought out there that this Helter Skelter was an influence on early heavy metal.
Most people consider it, some people consider it to be the first heavy metal song ever recorded.
I do.
I got chills when I read that because I just got chills right now. That's really cool. I did not know that. It's considered, this is a new term for me that I'm just now, and since I've read it, I'm coming across it all the time, reading stuff from critics, but proto metal song.
Right.
It's also considered among the greatest songs ever recorded by the Beatles from what I've read. Mm-hmm. By a lot of critics, you know, these statements are all just things I've read. They're not mine. But it's an interesting part of this song's history. And also, this is a kind of an unfortunate connection to Charles Manson.
Right.
I won't go into it all unless you want to talk about it. But yeah, so interesting song, man. I really loved reading about Helter Skelter. And wrap up the discussion on the White Album with another great song from this album. Tom's got it.
Happiness is warm. Yes, it is.
When I was trying to figure out which cut of that song I wanted Tom to get was, I read something from a critic who said that last part where Lennon hits that note is just so chilling, and so I forwarded to it, and yeah, that's a great part of the song. It's the end of the song, but Happiness with a Warm Gun. Part of the song's story that I found interesting was Lennon's inspiration for it. It's a direct quote from an advertisement that he saw in an American gun magazine that he found kind of troubling. So he wrote a song about it. He also used some sexual metaphors involving drug abuse. You know, the theme of sex, violence, and drugs. But it's also regarded as one of the best songs on that album, and a delight to go through that album.
Yeah, it's a great record. White Album is a great record. Mm. And so I'm trying to figure out what my favorite song on there is.
Yeah,
it might be Happiness is a Warm Gun, which is a song. Now, before we break here for the weather, what did you think of Revolution Number 9?
About the same thing times 10 what I thought when I heard somebody go cookie on that, you know, it just,
yeah.
What can you say?
I mean, it's 7.5 minutes, and it is an experimental and crazy thing. Number nine.
I do not understand all of the experimental things, but I'm kind of beginning to understand, its value to what we have now.
That's a John song, or if you want to call it a song. And at that time, he was, you know, obviously he was in love with Yoko Ono, who was an experimental artist, and influenced him to do weirder and stranger things, and that's one of them.
Yeah. You know? The way I'm kind of wrapping my head around all of it, because a lot of the albums I've listened to have experimental songs on them, and studio work that was experimental. And,
yeah.
And the way I'm wrapping my hand around my head around all of that is that they're, you know, the experimental songs, I may not enjoy those very much personally,
yeah,
but the way they stretch their imaginations and creative skills during those experimental periods may have produced, you know, the work that they later did that I right. do enjoy so much. But
okay. All right, we got a break here for the weather. We'll come back. We got another album to talk about on Vic's Picks right here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up after 4 o'clock, you big dummy. Straight out of context, we don't have any Nick D Show spies this week. And then we've got Fly Jams Friday, all the regular Friday features. We're continuing with Vic's Picks. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay, Vic, let's get back to it.
All right. Number 9, Blonde on Blonde by Bob Dylan, the great Bob Dylan. And for you Dylan fans, I apologize, but I skipped this one because it's one I've listened to a lot in the past before because I love it. And I've always enjoyed listening to Bob Dylan, although there's a lot of albums I haven't listened to yet by Dylan. But so I skipped and I went on to the next one. Number 8, London Calling by a band called The Clash. Changed my world as far as music goes. I didn't know a thing about The Clash until this week. The Clash's third studio album. And let me just say, you guys, I'm going to need some help on this one because, like I said, I got a lot of notes on The Clash, very little notes on this particular album, which is a double album, just like the other one. So I had a lot of music to listen to this week, and I got crunch time down at the end, and I kind of mismanaged my time. I spent, when I started listening to this album, I loved it from the very first song, London Calling. And in fact, if Tom wants to put, Tom picked all the songs for this album, which was a big help, but if he wants to play that one, we can at least, for those who haven't listened to it, go ahead and fall in love with The Clash. Here's London Calling. London Calling to the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down. London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing. Except for the rain and the crunch of thing. The ice is... I love that song. That may be my favorite song now. It may have knocked Jimi Hendrix's song that was my favorite off. I don't know. I just fell in love with that song. That's the lead-off track. It gets things going. And while I was listening to this album, I was reading about The Clash. One of the things I read was a documentary film. I watched it twice, and I just started falling in love with this band and their story. And like I said, I kind of, my research went off into the direction of the band. So I have a ton of notes on The Clash, you know, their rise and fall, their manager, who was highly important if you're going to have a discussion about The Clash. I have plenty of notes about each member of the band, but as far as each song, the album, all that, I was just kind of listening to it in the background and studying this band. What do you think about The Clash, Nick? Do you have an opinion?
I love them. I think it's great. I think this is a great album. I think it's actually a really important record, and I love it. And the kind of statement that they made, and the kind of influence that this band had on other bands is massive.
You know, Tom had talked to me about that before I listened to this band, and I did come across a lot of reading material about that, especially about, let me see, stomach through my notes here. One of the band members, was it Mick Jones? It was. Mick Jones, the lead guitar player, lead vocalist, he and I love his lyrics, by the way, and his style of songwriting, but he went to, and they were friends, he was friends with members of the Sex Pistols. A lot of the band members of The Clash had become friends with the Sex Pistols, but it was Jones who said, after seeing the Sex Pistols' first show, he said, this is it, this is where music is going, you know? And so, and then, you know, The Clash becomes this... Just, I don't know, how do you describe this band? They're performers, they're, you know, eccentric, they were, you know, angry pissed off, poor. You know, I mean, they just were rock and roll, punk rock.
They're the only band that matters.
They're the only band that matters. That's a quote, right? That
yeah.
kind of has.
Yeah, that's how they were built. They were frequently billed as the only band that matters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Even back.
Oh,
see,
yeah.
that's another thing that I read about The Clash was that, you know, a lot of the bands that have put out albums that are now, you know, regarded as among the greatest albums ever recorded were not necessarily. Some of them were not necessarily regarded as such at the time. The Clash was regarded as a great band at the time, and then you know had such an influence on so much music and other bands. And I loved reading about the way. I'd love to hear either Tom or you, Nick, your opinions of Bernard, because it seems that there's a split. He's a polarizing character, and he was a big, important thing with The Clash because he gave them a lot of the brilliant ideas they had, their attitude. A lot of it stems from Bernard and the way he, instructed the band, or I guess led the band, at least in the beginning. I know as they gained popularity, they kind of, you know, especially Mick Jones Joe Strummer kind of became the leaders. But Bernard had a big, influence on this band. And I was wondering what you guys thought about him, you know.
Well, that was those were the days where managers of bands took front and center. Look at the Sex Pistols, you got Malcolm McLaren, you got all these other guys who were running, management. Peter Grant was Led Zeppelin's manager and made as many headlines as Zeppelin did. And that was the day when those were the days when the managers were as big a star as the bands themselves.
Yeah, and he kind of has that look too when going through articles and pictures about it. And another guy I came across was Cosmo Vinyl. He was, I guess, the band's personal assistant, but he had a lot to do with their style, which was a big part of The Clash. You know,
right,
he told them what to put in their hair and how to comb it, and so he was another kind of unofficial artistic director, style director, but a big influence on them as well. There's so much we could talk about with The Clash. Not near enough time.
Yeah, it's true.
An amazing band. This album, London Calling, is one of my favorites.
The craziest album that they ever did came next. It's an album called Sandinista.
Yeah,
and
okay.
It's a triple album. It's a crazy record.
That one, a Combat Rock. I want to listen to them all now.
Combat Rock was the most commercial success they ever had.
Yeah, I noticed.
Big pop album.
I skipped ahead and listened to a few songs on that one, and I know a few from that one. But
that was the biggest commercial success.
Quickly, to show you how little I knew about them, I know we got to go. When I started watching the documentary on The Clash, I kept thinking, I was halfway through it, and I kept wondering when he was going to start putting on the face makeup and the lipstick. I thought it was The Cure. That tells you. I've learned a lot.
Two completely different bands. So, all right, Vic, very cool. All right, we're going to take a break because the news is up with Vic next.
Here's Dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did? Oh, no, you big dummy. You dummy.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the WGN Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. The regular Friday features are beginning with You Big Dummy. This is where we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom will vote, I will vote, and then we'll get our first phone caller through, and we'll be our third vote for the dummy of the week. Alrighty then. The regular Friday features are continuing. We do not have any Nick D Show, Nick Spies, Nick D Show Spies this week, so we're going to skip that one. But let's begin with this one. Dummy number one, dummy number one, dummy number one. Distracted driving comes in many forms. This, however, might be the most unusual one yet. A woman in Kelowna, B.C. has been convicted for driving without due care after she was caught behind the wheel with a bowl and chopsticks. According to a court ruling, the woman was driving along Highway 33 where two police officers were involved in a call operation. Constable Need, who was in an elevated location at the time of the incident, told the judge that he observed the female driver with a bowl in her left hand in a position three-quarters to her face of the steering wheel and chopsticks in the driver's right hand. Need states that there were no hands on the steering wheel and describes the woman's action as using the chopsticks to shovel food. She was also believed to be speeding, driving 60 kilometers in a 50-kilometer zone. Constable Yabnowski issued a ticket, she argued that she was, quote, perhaps no more than 10 kilometers over the speed limit, that she managed to keep one hand on the steering wheel while driving. When the matter was taken to court, the woman presented the same argument to the judge and explained that, quote, she had one hand on the wheel with three fingers of her left hand holding the wheel and her index finger and thumb holding the bowl of spinach. Judicial Justice Burgess rejected both the defendant's arguments, stating that even 1 kilometer over the speed limit is speeding. Burgess also favored the evidence of Constable Need due to his elevated location and view of the vehicle. He was clear and precise in his evidence regarding the observation, Burgess writes in the court ruling. Need was candid with his cross-examination in saying that he would not have had the woman stopped by a pickup crew if he had not seen one of her hands on the steering wheel. Burgess also clarified that she does not find that a person who is eating while driving is without due care and attention. The minimum standard of a reasonable and prudent person, as implied by the Crown, would be to leave at least one hand, full hand, on the steering wheel while the vehicle being driven is in motion. The hand on the steering wheel should not also be holding another object. The case ended with the female driver being found guilty of driving without due care, and she will have to October 31st, 2019, to make a payment.
My only child is a dummy.
Yeah, I'm worthless, penniless, broke, busted, and
a dummy.
Dummy number two. Dummy number two. Dummy number two. Fox News opinion host Laura Ingraham's efforts to troll liberals reached a new, if not bizarre, level Friday, as she attempted to drink a steak stuffed with incandescent light bulbs through a plastic straw. She said, well, it's a meal that will trigger all the right. I meant all the left people, she said, to kick off the Ingraham angle. Okay, you ready? You ready? You're prepared for this, she asked her viewers, and an alarm blared and the camera pulled back to reveal what she called the ultimate trigger sculpture. It has everything the Democrat hates. Advertising the art project. If I could have put an SUV on this, I would have. As the hunk of impaled beef set before her, it occurred to her that straws don't tend to work when they consume solid objects. Can you sip steak? She wondered out loud. Nonetheless, she tried. Mmm, tastes good. It's kind of the vapors of the steak. Giving a chuckle, she noted, there are the light bulbs. These are the light bulbs that Andrew Yang said are so dangerous to the planet that we can often burn. They burn out too often. She appears to have been referencing Yang's performance at a climate town hall discussion with Democratic presidential candidates on Wednesday, where moderator Wolf Blitzer raised the Trump administration's rollback on requirements for more energy-saving light bulbs. Criticizing the move, Yang warned that the incandescent lights intentionally burn out, he said, and they're not environmentally friendly. As a solution, he advocated for the use of bulbs to consume less energy and need to be replaced as often. However, Yang's position is neither as new or radical as Ingram's theatrics imply. In fact, phasing out of energy-efficient bulbs has been bipartisan support, including a 2007 law signed by President George W. Bush to limit halogen and incandescent bulbs. And meanwhile, plastic straws and beef were also topics at the town hall, as Democrats have advocated for paper straws and cutbacks on the consumption of red meat, which contributes to the production of greenhouse gases.
And I can't wait to see you starring in your first movie.
Yeah.
Deep Dummy. I'm not kidding. You're a big dummy.
Dummy number three. Dummy number three. Dummy number three. Dutch YouTubers Thijs Granzer and Govert Sweep were arrested at Area 51 in the American state of Nevada. The NYE County Sheriff's Office said on Facebook they told the police that they saw and understood the no trespassing warnings, but they just wanted to look at the site. According to local police, the duo had a drone, cameras, and laptops on them. They recorded footage on the Area 51 site, a test location for the United States Air Force, where popular conspiracy theories say that American authorities experiment on aliens. 20-year-old Granzer and 21-year-old Sweep were arrested on Tuesday. They're both facing charges of trespassing. In July, an event appeared on Facebook calling people to storm Area 51 on September 20th. More than 2 million people indicated that they would do so. The initiator of the event took it offline after a visit from the FBI. The event was instead turned into a festival near the site. Thijs Granzer has a DIY building and restoration channel on YouTube with over 735,000 followers, and Govert Sweep has a ghost hunting channel with over 300,000 followers.
You bigger dummy than my dumb. Dummy! Dummy!
All right. Let's take a break here for some weather, and then we'll come back. We got a couple of more dummies to go through here. And then we will vote. All right, here's your weather forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, afternoon temperatures will range from low 70s north and near the lake. The scattered showers may erupt at any time. Let's see, a 75 to 80 degree range, actually, the temperature will rise. For tomorrow, mostly sunny, trending warmer, temperatures peak in the low 80s in most locations. Some clouds will begin building later in the day, leading to a chance of thunderstorms at night. For Sunday, thunderstorms may be ongoing early and then partly sunny, warm, more humid. Temperatures will peak into the low to mid 80s. Clouds will build again in the afternoon with a chance of more showers. And then on Monday, summer in September continues. Partly to mostly sunny skies, raise temperatures to the mid 80s. Scattered clouds will bring an outside chance of an isolated late day evening thunderstorm. It's currently 71 degrees at O'Hare, at 71 at Midway, at 69 at the lake front. All right, we'll take a break. We come back, we will finish up You Big Dummy. Don't have any Nick D Show spies this morning, and we'll get to Fly Jams Friday. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It's Friday, so the Friday regular features are here, and we are in the middle of You Big Dummy. All right. A couple more dummies to talk about, so let's do it. Dummy number four, dummy number four, dummy four. A travel influencer couple have come under fire for posting a dangerous picture of themselves posing over a cliff edge, and not for the first time. The pair, known by their Instagram handle, Positravelty, shared a snap of them at Laguna Humante in the Peruvian Andes, in which Cody Workman is sitting and holding partner Kelly Castile over the edge of a sheer cliff face. "The world is waiting for you," the couple from the U.S. wrote in a caption accompanying the photo, which seemed to address the issue of risk-taking. "Behind the masses of those that wish to watch you lead a quiet and quiet life is an open, unlined canvas. We urge you to take a chance, to push past barriers of negativity and oppression, of self-fulfillment, and paint the picture of that you want to be. Never let yourself be beat down for living your life by those too afraid to live their own. There is a difference between risking your life and taking a risk at having one. We know which side we'd rather be on. Do you?" While some of the couple's 170,000 followers were inspired by the post, calling it epic and amazing, others were less impressed. I don't know how high that cliff is, but one slip of your boot, no matter how slight, and both of you will be at the bottom of it, said one commentator. Another called the stunt just stupid beyond belief. Some detractors highlighted that posting shots that appeared dangerous, even if they were not, could inspire copycats to risk their lives. It doesn't matter if you played with perspective and it wasn't very dangerous for you. You really don't understand the power you hold, do you? Saying we all have personal responsibility is just a conscience-saving tool. You will encourage others who don't know how to play with perspective, and someone will kill themselves by accident trying to emulate you. You're an influencer. You influence. The clue is in the title. The couple defended the shot, telling Business Insider that it was quite easy, considering we didn't find this to be dangerous. As we discussed before, we love to push our creativity and play with perspectives. It is not dangerous. We would never risk our lives. It follows them hitting headlines earlier this year for a similarly controversial snap in which Workman is holding Castile over the side of an infinity pool in Bali while they kiss with a sheer drop below. At the time, they fought back at critics saying they weren't going to feed any negativity of this. Our account is about creativity, photography, kindness, perspective, and above all, positivity. Whether a photo does well or not, whether it is perceived one way or another, it's irrelevant to us. We post what we love, and we believe showcases our happiness, our adventures, and our creativity.
Hit laws, dummy.
Before this game, you were just a plain dummy, but after the night, you'd be a broke dummy.
Dummy number five. Authorities say a burglar broke into a Florida home, cooked himself an early morning meal, and told the resident there to, quote, go back to sleep. The home's occupant told investigators he awoke to discover the man cooking and eating sometime after 4 a.m. on Tuesday. Fox 13 in Tampa reported the burglar ran from the house when the resident called 911. Deputies from the county sheriff's office tracked down the suspect in a wooded and swampy area behind the home. Deputies said that Gavin Krim, 19-year-old Marine, allegedly entered the home through an unlocked rear door. Go back to sleep.
So to the dummy with the black mustache. Life you think it is being the father of a young dummy.
All right. Okay, so, all right, we've got a vote here. If you guys want to join us, if you want to vote after I give the repeat here, you guys, first person through at 312-981-7200 will be our third vote. Okay, we got the dummy who was eating with chopsticks while driving. We got the dummy news host who tried to drink a steak through a straw as a statement. We got the dummies who trespassed on Area 51 and were arrested. We got the dummy couple who took a photo dangling over a cliff. And we got the dummy burglar who cooked himself breakfast and told the resident to go back to sleep. Oh, man, people are stupid. Okay, Tom, what are your thought processes?
Well, I think the light bulb stuffed steak was pretty dumb, but, you know, calling Laura Ingram dumb is kind of just not fair. It's too easy.
Yeah.
I want to say the lady with the chopsticks, but I'm going to give it to the social media influencers because what they're doing, even though it's like, you know, forced perspective, whatever you want to call it, that is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really hate the profession of being a social media influencer. I think that's dumb in of itself.
Well, I mean, the all of the new agey mumbo jumbo crap that they were spouting is enough to make you go nuts. So you're giving the dummy couple who were on the photo dangling over a cliff.
Yeah, it's a massive drop.
Yeah.
It's a sheer drop. Okay. So.
All right. And by the way, the phone lines are open. First person through will be our third vote. 312-981-7200. Okay, so the dummy eating with chopsticks while driving is pretty amazing. I've never heard that before.
I got to give a tip of the cap, though, for doing it. You know,
yeah, I just
that's a bold strategy.
Yeah, it is. We have the Ingram who was trying to drink a steak through a straw. The dummies who came to Area 51. It's supposed to happen next week. That was when the original event was supposed to take place. So what were they? They were a week early?
Yeah, a little too early there.
A little too early. All right. And by the way, phone lines are open. First person through, third vote. You pick the dummy. You help pick the dummy of the week. 312-981-7200. Okay, I have to cast my vote for the dummy burglar who cooked himself breakfast and then told the resident to go back to sleep. That's got to be my favorite. The chopsticks is a close second. The chopsticks is a very, very close second. But yeah, so I'm going with the dummy burglar who cooked himself breakfast and told the resident who lived there to go back to sleep. So it's between two votes here. We have to break the tie. It's either the couple who took a photo dangling over the cliff or the burglar who cooked himself breakfast and told the resident to go back to sleep. Those are the two that you have to choose from. And here is Ray. Ray, which one of those would you pick?
Ray, I would think they should have the burglar throw the burger over the, you know, over the cliff and have him go get it. But I'll choose the burglar.
The burglar. Okay, so the burglar is the way. All right, Ray, thank you, buddy. So we have the burglar saying, hey, go back to sleep.
It's all good. I'm just making eggs.
I'm fine, man. Just go back to sleep. I was a little hungry.
Jeez.
It's funny, but it's also incredibly creepy.
Yeah, man.
First of all, lock your doors. You know what I mean? 4 o'clock in the morning, lock your door.
Your door should be locked.
You know, maybe it's, you know, you live in a neighborhood where it's, you know, you think it's okay to keep your door unlocked. Lock your door.
There is no neighborhood where it is okay to leave your door unlocked.
I'm just saying it. I agree. I totally agree.
I hate that insistence. Oh, but my neighborhood's safe. Yeah, but just lock your door, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I will never leave a door unlocked.
No, ever. I hate that.
I bolt it. I chain it. The whole...
And it's not paranoia here, man. It's just practicality. Yeah. I there have been many times, especially when I was living in Rogers Park in my college years, where people literally walked in because they thought we were the party apartment.
Right. Right.
And we're like, nah, man, that's upstairs. Please get out of here.
Get out of our apartment.
Please don't puke in
and
my hallway.
Stop making eggs. You just go back to bed.
Just go back to bed, man. I'm making eggs. I'm
cooking up some Spam. All right. Let's take a break. We got the news coming up. And then after the news, it's Fly Jams Friday. And we want to get in if you want to make some requests. We got requests already, right?
Yeah, but straight out of context.
Oh, wait, straight out of context.
Can't forget that.
I forgot straight out of context. How could I forget straight out of context? Wow. Okay, it's not Fly Jams Friday. It's straight out of context. We don't have Nick D's show spies. I just thought everything was done. But we got straight out of context, which we'll do right after the news. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck. Because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. Oh,
Out of context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
That's right. It is time for Straight Out of Context. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has your opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your Friday morning drive. But it's straight out of context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty and it makes you giggle like a 9-year-old, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and you send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Okay, Tom?
All right, let's get started. First one coming to us from Jesse. Here she is, the queen of straight out of context, Miss Wendy Snyder.
Now I want a screwball.
I have to find out what she thought of Big Brother.
I know.
Last night's Big Brother. That's a priority now. I'm going to have to contact her and find out. because I was ready to throw my TV out the window.
Get her during the Walk of Fame ceremony.
Yeah, I'll just walk up on stage when they were inducting Williams.
Yeah. Excuse me, please.
Hang on a second. This is important. I want to know if Wendy Snyder was as pissed off as I was at what happened last night on Big Brother. And if you were not listening at the beginning of the show, I almost kicked my TV in because of what happened on Big Brother last night. I was furious. I was insanely mad. And if you're a Big Brother fan and you're kind of just waking up and you watched it last night, do you agree with me that my head almost exploded at what happened last night on Big Brother? It was a great episode, but I wanted to smash my TV. Oh man! And the person who pulled the move is the person I hate the most in the house. But it was a great move. I got to admit. This person is playing the game, lying, cheating, doing whatever this person needs to do, and it was a great game move, but it made me furious. I was just beside myself when I was watching Big Brother last night. Oh my God! Anyway, well, I'll find out what Wendy thinks a little bit later on. Okay.
All right. Next up, it's me. I got caught by Fox Valley Mike here.
Uh oh.
Beef me, baby.
Now was that we were talking about there?
Taco Bell beefer.
Oh, the beefer. Yeah, the Taco Bell beefer. Which is still like the worst name for a fast food item of all time. I'd like a Taco Bell beefer, please. It sounds like what it does to you after you eat it. Doesn't it?
You'll be beefing.
That's exactly right, man. All right, next.
Okay, pardon me. Next up, it's Bill Leff caught here by Brian J.
I would keep playing with it during the game.
Oh man! Oh, come on, man. There's no appropriate time during the game to do that.
No.
By the way, I'm looking at Halloween costumes for women. Powerpuff Girls?
Oh, nice.
They're back? I mean, look, I happen to worship the Powerpuff Girls. I have the entire series on DVD at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's one of the greatest cartoons
awesome
ever. But I mean, is it 1999 again? What?
Maybe they're mounting a revival series.
I'm not against it because I worship the Who's your favorite Powerpuff Girl?
Oh, well, I want to say Blossom because my girlfriend is also a pale redhead.
Oh, okay.
But it's Buttercup.
It's absolutely Buttercup.
Buttercup is the best one.
There's no question about it. Yeah. E.G. Daily provides that voice.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's so great.
All right.
All right. Next up, we got Nick D.
Oh, no.
Caught by Tim.
You gotta take it where you can get it.
It's true.
Well, what was I talking about?
You know, that was also during the fast food conversation. We were talking with a caller who is a driver.
Oh, right. Okay.
And he was like, Casey's got good breakfast pizza.
Gotcha.
Which they do.
Okay.
Which they do.
All right. Casey's. All right.
All right. Next up, Steve Cochran here.
Uh-oh.
Let's see. Caught by Julia.
$100 for 4 hours. Worked out well for me.
That is a deal.
That's a deal. That's a good deal.
$100 for 4 hours?
No, I think that's good. I think that's good.
Were they just talking?
Did he have a coupon?
All right. Well, it was Easter weekend.
$100 for 4 hours of a beefer. That's
is that what the kids are calling
that's
it
what
now?
They're calling it a beefer.
Woo.
All right.
Got quite the beefer last weekend.
Yeah.
Next up, this is coming to us from Mark in Old Irving Park. Here's Nick D.
So this is like a football stadium filled with a bunch of beds that women are laying on and they're receiving facials and stuff. Oh, man. Oh, God.
Oh, what a world record.
I don't even know what to... I didn't... Oh, man.
You didn't even...
Didn't even realize it. Seriously.
Hell, I wrote that down.
I didn't even realize it. I didn't even realize. Now listening to it now, my God. Okay, let's move on.
All right. This one's he hasn't been on for a little while. Roger Badish.
Oh.
Caught by Jim.
Now Roger's putting his head up his own. No, no, get it out.
Wait, what? Pardon. I should say John Hansen, but yeah. It involves Roger Bash.
Oh, okay. That was John Hansen.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Roger does that all the time. I've worked with him. Okay.
All right. Next up, we've got a little John Williams here coming from Mark D. in Aurora.
I try and grab life by the smooth handle.
The smooth handle.
The smooth handle. All right. Beefer.
All right. Again, Nick D.
What?
Unbelievable. On a roll this week. This one's coming to us from Bob.
You know, my girlfriend at the time, who didn't like that kind of music at all or anything hard. Oh, man. Oh, boy. Okay.
All right. She's sitting in traffic. It's the lovely Mary Vandevelde.
Oh, here we go.
This one caught by Pat in McHenry.
Mine, it's just too big.
Mary, what were you? You remember what you were talking about there?
No idea.
Just talking about you're talking about your phone. You're talking about the, new
yes,
iPhone.
Oh yes, the new XR. Yeah, it is too.
It's too
far.
Big.
I'm not going to say that. And I'm not going to say it fits just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
No, it's a okay. Great phone.
Okay, there you go. So you're talking about, just to clear that up, Mary was talking about her phone.
But it doesn't fit in my pocket.
Okay. Welcome to work, Mary.
Yay! It's Friday.
Yay.
Woohoo!
Yay!
And well, it's crappy out.
Walk of Fame today.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Yes. Gonna head over there and, you know,
and
honor John and Andrea and Marlene.
Yeah. Great.
And the bowling man.
And the Ten Pin Tattler. Absolutely. Yeah, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be great.
Looking forward to it. Okay. You should come, Nick.
I went when I was inducted.
Yes.
And,
yeah, you did go then.
But I took the morning. I took both mornings off because at 10 o'clock, that's my prime sleeping time.
Yeah, well, there's always time for sleep later.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, I didn't get. I got about 5 hours last night at the most.
Yeah.
Four, I think about four. So, you know.
All right.
Take that power nap, Nick. Power nap.
Yeah, power nap.
As Orion would say.
You're talking to a guy who this is true, Mary. This is true. It takes me. This is not a joke. At least an hour and a half to fall asleep every time I go to bed.
Oh, man. It's because you're watching too much hype TV.
I don't know what it is. I've watched too bad.
Read a book.
I watched Big Brother and I wanted to throw my TV through the window last night. You don't watch Big Brother, do you?
No. Oh. That's one reality thing I do not watch. So you really need to start reading books before you try.
No, I do. I have a book.
Oh,
I have
you do?
A, okay. I have books next to on my nightstand.
But do you read them?
I do. You know, they're there for show.
Well,
I have people come in my bedroom and go, look, I have books. I'm intelligent.
You didn't say you read them.
I've always had trouble. Yeah, they're just sitting there for show. No, but I do. I've always had trouble sleeping, which is one of the reasons why. Which is one of the reasons why I do well in this during this time period.
Wow.
So,
yeah. Or you should get a car and start driving around. That'll put you to sleep.
That'll put me right to sleep.
Yep.
I'm looking.
Why nap in the car?
It's raining a little bit out there now.
It's not fun. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, thanks, Mary. Let's do one more before we break.
All right. One more here. This is going to be Brian Noonan caught by a different Jim.
My tongue is like Rembrandt.
What the?
That is a ringing endorsement.
What is that?
Wow.
All right. Well, there you go. There's Brian Noonan. We continue even more, right?
Yeah, just a few more.
Okay. Straight Out of Context is continuing. So there you go. That'll be coming up right after we break here for some weather. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck. F-bomb.
Out of context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Friday morning. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. At 6 o'clock, Steve Cochran has your morning drive. And it's Friday, so that means our regular features are happening. Straight Out of Context right now, we have no Nick D spies this week, but continue to listen all week long. And if anybody mentions me in any capacity, jot it all down, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And we got Fly Jams Friday to round out the morning. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, let's get back to it.
All right. Next, coming to us from Robin Hellenville, it is radio legend Orion Samuelson.
Oh, here we go.
And so we're going to watch that one to see what the giant package is finally going to be, and we may find out this week.
Is that word again, man? I love it when I love it when Orion makes it on
it's spectacular
on Straight Out of Context. Not as much as I love it when Dave makes it.
True,
because Dave is always my favorite when he makes this Straight Out of Context. all right, what do we got next?
All right, next is coming to us from Scott in Carpentersville. Here is Bill Leff.
Head, if the head is still in you, that's your problem.
Oh, man.
Oof.
Oof. Oh, man. Boy, Bill, pretty impressive showing this week.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah.
Rising in the fantasy rankings. All right. Next is Rokon. Listen closely here. This is coming to us from Margaret in Bridgeport.
Upset that I'm eating his sandwich. Mom.
Oh, man. Boy, our listeners have a good ear.
There's something else.
Some good ears right there, man. All right.
All right. Next up, here's Wendy and Steve. This is coming to us from Maria.
Are you just buttering my biscuit?
I would if you asked. And you wouldn't have to ask twice.
What? What? So is that all they do during crosstalk is be filthy?
And butter biscuits, apparently.
I don't understand anything that happens in the morning. all right.
All right, next up here is Wendy Snyder caught by Barbara.
Gotta tell you, it was so little I didn't really see any arms and legs, so maybe they're still in me.
What?
Okay, that's, she's talking about her ticks. She had a
her
tick.
Her what?
She had a tick?
She had a tick bite, so that's the other thing Bill said about the head. That was, you have to dig it.
Yeah, you got to get it out.
Yeah, so this whole conversation, poor Wendy got a tick, and, you know, she pulled it out, and then she's
terrible.
Really afraid, and she had to call the doctor. And yeah, it was a big
terrible.
Thing. Yeah, and she was just gardening, I believe, or something.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was on her stomach.
Did she have Lyme disease?
No, she doesn't.
Can't she get Lyme disease?
Well, you can, but, you know.
Jeez, that's
she'll be
terrible.
Fine. She'll be fine.
Okay, good. Well,
but that's what all this
all that stuff came from. Okay,
about the tick.
All right,
the tick fest. Yeah,
it was the tick. Okay.
All right.
By the way, Dean gave Hustlers a B.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
I'm looking. I hope it's good. I really am. I really do hope it's good. I just have that. There's a big hurdle for me, and that hurdle's name is Jennifer Lopez. I just can't stand her.
Jenny from the Block.
No. No. All right, what's next?
All right, final one here. It's you.
Man, what?
Caught by Amy.
It's massive, by the way. Oh, man. What was I talking about?
I don't know.
Oh, all right. Okay. By the way, Dean gave the goldfinch a C-. So, there you go. Hey, Nick Offerman's in town.
Oh, that's
this week.
That's very cool.
I'm sorry. I always like to. I always watch Dean's weekend buzz. His weekend Dean's list every Friday morning. I'm always watching. I find out what's going on in this city that I know nothing about. So Chris Hardwick's in town too. I love him. Okay. Hey, you want to play the? Do you want to play the thing? What happened to the thing? Oh, there we go.
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jam's Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
That's right, man. Fly Jams Friday. By the way, Morrissey is playing Ravinia tomorrow, so we know where Amy Guth is going to be.
And we know where all the meat's not going to be.
Right. No meat at anywhere at Ravinia. Well, they grill it. People bring their little grills.
He's not going to allow it.
What a jerk.
He's
if he shows up.
Yeah, he's actually having trouble selling tickets.
Well, that's not
because
surprising.
People are really mad at him. He's made some statements over the last
Amy's on,
so.
But she's got on the air.
Mm-hmm.
So she won't be going to see.
Or she might play hooky.
Yeah, she
go
might,
see
just
Morrissey.
To go see Morrissey. Okay. All right. Hey, do we want to say hello to DJ Luscious Hushus?
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushus, baby.
That's right. I'm Wiki Wiki Nicky, and we got Verified Viggity Viggity Vic, Verified Double V running around like a maniac in the newsroom.
So, Luscious Hushes, you got some requests?
Absolutely.
Let's play a few fly jams this morning.
First one coming to us from Mike in Louisville. It's Lionel Richie, Dancing on the Ceiling.
Oh, God.
This music video is awesome. It's like it's just like Inception.
Yeah.
He's on the ceiling.
Yeah. Good Lord. All right, what's next? what's the less I say about that, the better.
Fair enough.
What's next?
Coming up next, this one's coming to us from Sam. I mean, it's a classic. It's Play That Funky Music, Wild Cherry.
Yeah. Great song. That is a great song. That's one of my favorites. All right. I think we got time for one more.
Yeah, we'll do one more here. Coming to us from Dino, a little funkadelic from the album Standing on the Verge of Getting It On.
Yeah.
Not Just Knee Deep.
Yeah. So is George Clinton the most sampled artist ever?
No, it's the drummer from James Brown's band.
Okay. But there's a lot of samples. I mean, the Funkadelic gets sampled a lot.
They do.
And that song was sampled. That was Me, Myself, and I.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to those guys?
De La Soul?
Yeah.
They're still out there.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Because I like them. All right. All right there, DJ Luscious Hushes. Thanks. Okay, we're going to break here, and when we come back, we got the news.